Gravitational Pull by Introversia, read by Cookie Mom 6067. Chapter 1. Disaster. Jim's head was splitting. His vision was blurry. He slowly lifted his head from the control panel of the shuttle. The shuttle's alarms were blaring and pinging around him. He reached across the control panel, trying to right the tilting ship. He slid sideways in his seat. His ears were ringing painfully. He took a deep breath, fighting back nausea. His mouth was thick with blood. He turned his head and spat hard on the ground. He reached up and touched his nose. His gloved fingers came away red. Everything was happening too quickly, but his mind was moving like a great injured beast wading through a sea of tar. He turned his head, and vertigo spun his vision and made his stomach lurch. He searched the shuttle for signs of a co-pilot. He was alone. Small asteroids were hitting the shuttle. Each impact sent vibrations through the tiny vessel. His vision remained blurry, but he could read on the screen that the shuttle's shields were down to 13%. He couldn't remember why he was on a shuttle. "Priorities, Jim," he shouted at himself, sat down and focused on getting the shuttle out of the asteroid field. There had to be something he could get a lee of, a nearby shuttle bay, or even a hospitable planet. For a second time, he leveled out the small vessel. He needed help, that much he knew. He remembered he was a lieutenant on the USS Farragut. "Farragut, come in." His head was splitting. The navigational screen was a static mess. "Farragut, come in. This is Lieutenant Kirk." A body bounced soundlessly off the front window of the shuttle. Their face was obscured by a shattered visor. The EV suit was in tatters, slashed by flying asteroids, the same asteroids that were pummeling his shuttle. "Farragut, come in. We have a man." Jim couldn't even be sure who he was looking at. Their tether snapped and they were flung out into a sea of dust, rocks, and ice. "I'm sorry," Jim said. The console was now covered in his blood. He wiped his gloved palm across it, trying to clear his view, but everything was growing dim. The power must be failing. He redirected more power to life support, reducing the shuttle's interior to shadows and dimly glowing lights. The alarms were still blaring. He got up one more time to retrieve the medical kit, his legs folded beneath him. The floor was cool against his brow. Jim wondered who had been outside the shuttle and why. "I'm sorry," he whispered again and again. "I'm sorry." Pike strode onto the bridge of the USS Enterprise. It was to be expected that all eyes would be on him, but he could tell that his officers could read by his demeanor that all was not well. "Ortegas, we've received the last known coordinates of the Farragut." "What do you mean, last known?" Uhura asked. She closed her mouth, realizing she'd interrupted. "Exactly what I said," Pike said evenly. "Ortegas." "Charting a course." "I need better," Pike said, as he sat down in the captain's chair. "We're on our way, sir." Ortegas knew exactly what was expected of her. Commander Chin Riley stepped out of the turbolift, addressing Captain Pike. She said, "I have everything, although it isn't much." "Please debrief the bridge," Pike said. Chin Riley nodded. "We've received a direct order from Admiral April to go investigate the status of the Farragut. The Enterprise is the closest to its last known coordinates." "And fastest," Ortegas muttered. "There were no distress signals, no reports of anything unusual, no known enemy vessels, and..." "On screen, please," Pike added. "Yes, sir." Chin Riley flicked her fingers across her pad, and a map bloomed across the main screen. "As you can see, while they were on the edge of Federation space, there were no known enemy vessels, and not a single anomaly in that vicinity."
"Commander, when was their last transmission received?" Spock asked.
"It's been 26 hours.
"Anomalies are still a possibility, as their name implies," Spock said.
"Captain, we've arrived."
Ortegas turned, looking at Pike. This looks bad. Where the Farragut was meant to be was now a field of debris. Yellow alert, scan for life signs, Pike said. He sat forward, gripping the armrests of his captain's seat. Why were they here? Spock asked. According to the Admiral, they were here to check on a Federation space station, the Gateway. It was currently not in use, and they were sent to check on its viability to be reinstated, Chin Riley filled in. Those are buddies, Lieutenant Noonien Singh said, her eyes fixed on the screen. Any life signs? Pike asked impatiently. Nothing, sir, Spock reported. There is a large amount of radiation emitting from the Farragut's last known location. That's to be expected if they were blown up, Lieutenant Noonien Singh said. Yes, Lieutenant, but I don't think they were blown up, as you say, or at least not by another party. The radiation field is not unlike that of a cataclysmic warp core malfunction. That is to say, the pattern of the radiation suggests a warp core breach, Captain Pike said. But how and why? That remains to be seen. It might also interfere with our sensors' attempts to pick up life signs, Spock said, his fingers working swiftly across his console as he sought answers. I think all that's left to be done is to collect as many of the dead as we can. Una Chin Riley, the captain's number one, sat at the ready room table with her pad resting before her. She took a long, slow breath, trying not to let her emotions get the best of her. She knew her crew and captain needed her at her best. There would be time to mourn later. The room grew quiet. Pike sat forward. Let's get some theories as to what exactly has happened here. We need to understand how this happened so we can make sure it never does again. Spock's mind felt split in two. The destruction of the Farragut was disconcerting. The knowledge that they'd lost so many lives was cause to grieve. There had to be an explanation, but it was difficult to focus on the why when all he could think about was the who. He'd just met Jim Kirk, and for lack of a better word, there was something unique about him. It was like hearing the beginning bars of a beautiful piece of music or the opening lines of a poem, but the rest of it was lost to the ages, never to be completed. It was indeed a loss that would affect many. Spock decided he must reflect on the loss of Jim Kirk later in the privacy of his quarters. Now is not the time. Captain, I just searched through the Farragut's last transmissions, and they were in contact with a shuttle. Uhura sat forward holding her tablet, her eyes reading quickly. The shuttle was the Loudon. It was making an early return trip back to the Farragut because they were being swarmed by organisms, specifically the GS-54. Spock's mind briefly flashed back to Michael. She'd been on a shuttle that had been attacked by the same organisms. If attacked was the right word. They're small but work incredibly fast depending on the size of the swarm and can destroy a shuttle's ability to maintain a life support system by draining it of all of its electricity faster than engines can generate more. If the shuttle were to have suddenly lifted off the space station, Ortega said slowly, her eyes darting in thought, a sudden departure of the Loudon from the exterior of a space station as small as the Gateway could easily dislodge any debris, such as ice, Spock added. Spock flicked his fingers up his pad and a transparent 3D model of the Gateway space station appeared above the table. It's still not big enough. Even if the Farragut's shields were down, how would the debris get the momentum? Lieutenant La'an Noonien Singh asked. Spock adjusted his pad. There is an unusual amount of asteroid particles within the radiation blast. I have a theory, but I need to run some equations. What have you discovered, Mr. Spock? Asteroid 65899 Marmoris is not on its usual circuit. It has vanished. I am now certain it was asteroid 65899 Marmoris that collided with the Farragut. It had been on a complex horseshoe orbit of Marmoris Major, the nearest planetoid. The debris that Ortega suspects was dislodged from the space station must have collided with asteroid 65899 Marmoris. The timing and its results would have been cataclysmic. The asteroid must have been thrown off course. It would be enough to take out even the Enterprise if our shields were down to receive a shuttle. The Farragut was at its most vulnerable, Unichin Riley added with an air of sorrow. Prepare a report for the Admiral, Mr. Spock, Pike said and nodded at Una. Number one, get a team together to retrieve the victims of the accident. It was Jim Kirk, Uhura said, on the Loudon. Play the transmission. La'an sat up straighter, her fist clenching. Please, she added. The captured transmission crackled with static and distortion. It sounded like it was centuries old, even though it had happened only days before. Jim Kirk to the Farragut. We've got a nasty case of the fleas, or in this case, GS-54. Lieutenant Germain is currently doing a hands-on sweep, but I think we need to come home for a proper cleansing, so to speak. Chief Barbary here. We hear you loud and clear, Lieutenant. Come on back, and we'll get you ship-shape in no time and back out on task. Thank you. We'll be docking in 3 minutes. Kirk out. You're all clear, and we're ready when you are. Spock looked at Captain Pike, whose shoulders had dropped in despair, and his brows furrowed lightly. It adds up. But if Lieutenant Kirk and Lieutenant Germain were on a shuttle, Uhura said hopefully, their chances of survival after a warp core breach of that magnitude in a compromised shuttle are less than 3.4%, Spock paused, and 0.1 for Lieutenant Germain if he was on the outside of the ship in an EV suit addressing the problem of the GS-54 organisms. The door slid open and Sam Kirk rushed into the room. Captain Pike, we have a weak life signal coming from the furthest quadrant of asteroids. It's not much, but it's there. We have a rescue mission, Pike said, standing up. Jim Kirk's eyelids were heavy as he forced them open. He gasped like a fish, unable to catch his breath. The shuttle was completely dark. No power meant no life support. He punched his chest to get his environmental suit's visor to activate. It closed snugly and fresh air was pumped into his helmet. He laughed soundlessly. He felt a warm tear travel back and into his ear. This wasn't how he'd expected things to end. But at the same time, dying alone in space, adrift in a shuttle, didn't seem so odd, did it? He sat up dizzily. He needed to get the shuttle operational. He needed to contact someone. But he wasn't sure who. Small bioluminescent creatures no bigger than fireflies were flitting about the shuttle. He waved his hand impatiently and they drifted away like embers from a fire and then circled back, swarming about his suit. He stared in wonder as they flew about him in waves and ripples. There was debris floating past the shuttle windows. He had no idea how long he'd been there. It was so quiet. He took a long, slow breath just to hear himself breathing. Slowly, he lifted off the floor of the shuttle. No gravity, Jim mumbled. He coughed violently, blood spatter painting the inside of his visor, obscuring his vision. Rose-tinted glasses, he whispered, feeling lightheaded and lost. So very, very lost. His tongue was bitter with the salt and metal tang of blood. He wondered if he should be panicking. He looked down at his suit and depressed an emergency signal triggering button. He turned on the communicator. His visor informed him his EV suit was at 8% power. He couldn't think of his name or title. Did he have a title? Captain, we picked up a message. It's only 8 hours old. The transmission was corrupted by the particle waves, but it's Jim Kirk. I recognize his voice. I know it's him. Uhura's eyes were filled with tears, yet her voice was full of hope. He sounded delirious, but alive. Open all channels, Pike said quickly. Yes, sir, Uhura said. Enterprise to Jim Kirk. Jim, I don't know if you can hear us, but hold on. This is Captain Pike. We're on our way. Pike turned to Una. Commander, then looked to La'an. You and Nuni and Singh, I want an away team put together and ready on the transporter pad in 2 minutes. I volunteer, Spock said.
I don't think more than a two-person team is required, La'an said, nodding at Spock.
Suit up, Pike responded. Number one, take the bridge.
Pike rose. Uhura, tell Chief Kyle I'm on my way with La'an and Spock. Send him the coordinates from the life signal that Sam found.
Yes, Captain, Uhura said.
La'an followed Pike into the turbo lift with Spock on her heels.
Captain, are you joining us?
No, as much as I'd like to.
Pike's tone was tight.
I'm going to sickbay. I want Mbenga to be as prepared as possible.
Pike snapped his fingers and then grabbed his communicator.
Lieutenant Kirk, please meet me in sickbay. We'll be needing information on radiation exposure and sickness. I want you to be Dr. Mbenga's living encyclopedia.
Yes, sir, came Sam's quick reply.
Pike stepped out of the turbolift with La'an and Spock. Are you certain it was wise to directly involve Sam Kirk? His emotions may compromise his performance.
Spock grabbed an EV suit as he spoke.
His brother may or may not make it, Mr. Spock. Sam needs to be there, Pike said softly.
We'll bring him back.
La'an looked at Spock. Her face, although more guarded than most humans, expressed irritation.
Spock blinked at her and said,
We don't know the precise conditions of the shuttle. It was suffering from the effects of the GS-54 parasites. Undoubtedly, it has also sustained damage from the blast of the warp core breach on the Farragut. Radiation will be a factor. Also, Lieutenant Uhura described Lieutenant Kirk's last message as being delirious. There is a chance that when we arrive at his last known location...
We are bringing him back alive,
La'an snapped. I wouldn't be here if I thought otherwise, Spock replied calmly.
Pike looked at them both.
Two of my best, he said. Now bring Kirk home.
La'an and Spock suited up swiftly.
As La'an and Spock stepped up onto the transporter pads, Captain Pike spoke again.
I want you both back here in 90 seconds or less, do you hear me? I don't want to have to treat you two for radiation exposure. Chief Kyle, you have the coordinates?
Yes, sir,
Chief Kyle said. La'an lowered her visor and nodded at Spock, who was standing at the ready, and said, Energize.
Spock looked around the dark space of the shuttle. He turned on his suit's exterior lights, illuminating the interior. At his feet, lying supine, was Lieutenant Jim Kirk, his face obscured by blood spatter that coated the inside of his visor. To Spock's right was La'an. She knelt down quickly.
Is he alive? She asked breathlessly.
One can hope, Spock said quickly.
La'an to Enterprise. Kyle, beam us back. We have him.
I'm locking on. His life signs are nearly...
Beam us back, now,
La'an commanded. Spock reached down, his hand resting firmly on Kirk's shoulder. He hardly knew the man, but the urgency that ran through him felt like the orbital pull of a moon.
He's alive, Spock said with authority.
In an instant, Spock was squinting at the bright lights that illuminated the sickbay. Dr. Mbenga and Nurse Chapel were moving Jim Kirk to a sickbed.
Life signs are weak, Nurse Chapel announced.
We're not going to lose him, Mbenga said, his voice resolute to Spock's ears.
La'an stepped back, lifting her visor. She flipped her communicator open.
Captain, we've retrieved Kirk and are in sickbay.
Sam Kirk was standing behind Mbenga. The blood was drained from his face. He stared at his brother, not interfering nor speaking, but his eyes were naked with emotion.
Spock looked away from Sam's ghostly face, feeling a wave of empathy.
Spock watched as Jim's visor retracted. He took a couple of steps backward. Logic dictated that he should return to his station at the bridge, but there was something primal that urged him to stay close to Lieutenant Kirk.
Pulse is weak, but steady, Nurse Chapel announced.
He's still with us, and Benga's voice was calm.
Let's get him some oxygen, and if need be, some adrenaline.
Spock kept his eyes on Lieutenant Kirk. His body was nearly still. It looked lifeless. Yet Spock could feel that Jim was still with them. His katra, or in his case, his soul, was burning brightly like a distant star, even though his physical body was very weak in its current state. It was a peculiar sensation, Spock thought,
to feel Jim's presence. He was, for all intents and purposes, a stranger. Spock could not account for it. He wondered if this is what humans meant when they said they felt haunted. That was the only word he felt suited the sensation of Kirk's soul. It felt like a ghost was somehow blindly reaching for him. He heard the sound of the sickbay doors opening and recognized the footfall of Captain Pike. He did not tear his gaze from Jim's face. "Captain, Kirk is alive," La'an said. "Good, keep him that way," was Pike's immediate response. Pike stood a few feet from Dr. Mbenga, watching him and Nurse Chapel work. "I'm going to have to keep him in a coma," Mbenga reported. "How are the radiation levels, Lieutenant Kirk?" Sam Kirk looked down at the pad in his hands. "We should dispose of his suit immediately. We're not in any danger, but his levels are high." "Thank you," Dr. Mbenga said briefly, touching Sam's arm. He and Chapel began cutting away the EV suit and the clothing underneath. "Mr. Spock, come keep his head stable. Sam, remove the boots." Sam put his pad down and hurried to do his part. Nurse Chapel looked at Spock, her fair hair framing her pale face. She said nothing aloud, but Spock knew by the soft tension at her brow and the flicker of her eyes that she was afraid for Lieutenant Kirk. Afraid he might die. Spock looked down at the dried blood on Jim's face. He looked younger laying there, his expression blank, almost childlike. "I'll leave you to it," Pike said to Dr. Mbenga. "Chin Riley and I will be in the ready room for a conference with Admiral April if anything changes." "I will notify you immediately," Dr. Mbenga said, resting a hand on Pike's shoulder. "Lieutenant Noonien Singh, please take the bridge."
"Yes, Captain."
La'an glanced at Jim and then left sickbay. Dr. Mbenga leaned back on his desk. James Kirk was finally stable, but his heart was beating weakly. Mbenga turned to look at Mr. Spock.
"There's not much to be done at this point," Mbenga said. "Either he'll pull through by sheer force of will, or he won't," Nurse Chapel whispered. "He's resilient and..."
Sam Kirk dipped his chin once and then lifted his head high, looking at Nurse Chapel.
"You and Dr. Mbenga have to..."
"They will perform their duties to their best ability, as they always have done, Lieutenant Kirk," Spock said.
"I need to report to Pike," Sam said, grabbing his pad as he exited the sick bay.
"I will stand by," Spock said.
Dr. Mbenga gazed at Spock for a moment and then decided it was a curious choice but did no harm and merely nodded. For 72 hours and 17 minutes, James T. Kirk lay motionless in his bed. Jim's brother, Lieutenant Sam Kirk, had taken official leave so that he could spend most of his waking hours seated by his brother. Nurse Chapel and Dr. Mbenga had several long conversations with other medical experts, which took place in the ready room. Starfleet's dozens of doctors whose expertise could be drawn upon made themselves available. Specialists gave their opinions on the finer details of treating patients with radiation sickness, head trauma, and advice on the best method of care for patients in comas and what to expect when those patients recovered from their comas. Mbenga turned to Chapel at the end of one particularly long meeting as soon as the screen closed.
"I think the real problem here is no one knows what kind of damage can be done by the parasites GS-54.
Nurse Chapel ran her hands over her face and sat back.
"That never stops anyone from sharing their theories ad nauseam."
Mbenga nodded before adding, "Thankfully, none of those organisms were brought in by the transporters."
"I can't believe that Jim survived all of that just to..."
Nurse Chapel trailed off.
Mbenga looked at her. "It's not like you to despair. Do not forget how much healing the body can do while it's at rest."
"Let's get back to the patient. Maybe he feels like waking up," Nurse Chapel said, accidentally sounding a bit sarcastic. She blushed.
"You know what I mean."
"I do, and yes, let's go check on him." Mbenga was just as frustrated as Christine, but he had to hold on to hope for her and most of all for Jim. The sick bay door slid open, and Mbenga and Chapel looked up from their work to see Spock walking in.
I had hoped I could visit with Lieutenant Kirk, Spock announced by way of explanation.
That is an excellent plan. Nurse Chapel and I have yet another conference call to attend to, and I would be glad to have you here.
M'Benga smiled warmly at Spock.
I had to send Sam to his quarters to get some sleep.
We're using the ready room for conferences, Nurse Chapel supplied. I will not hesitate to contact you if there are any changes in Lieutenant Kirk, Spock said. Spock sat in a chair next to Jim's biobed. On a small end table, there was a dirty coffee cup and a small plate, evidence that Sam Kirk had just been there. Spock frowned, stood up, and cleared away the dirty dishes. He exhaled softly through his nose, composed himself, and sat down again. Spock pulled up Jim's medical file and began to read it for the second time. He knew it was private, and technically he shouldn't have access to it, and that human medical science wasn't his field, but it wasn't impossible that he might find a way to help. He read in silence for some time and then closed out the files on his screen. The room had the sterile scent of most sick bays. Machines were humming faintly, and soft running computer lights blinked.
Computer, lower the lights by 60%, Spock said.
He leaned over and looked at Jim's face. The usual pink tones that warmed the skin of his human face were subdued, Spock noted. Jim had the beginnings of a beard growing in. He was dressed in a soft white tunic, and laid across him was a plaid blanket. It wasn't the type typically used in the sick bay. Spock touched the blanket's edge, and he leaned forward and gave it a sniff. He rubbed it between his index and thumb. Wool. He tilted his head in thought. His mother had something similar that she wore on the very rare cold nights at home. She'd told Spock she'd gotten it from Scotland on Earth when she'd gone to Edinburgh. The memory brought him a subdued feeling of warmth.
Lieutenant, I've just had an idea, Spock said, speaking softly. There were days in my youth when I became ill, or perhaps I should say, when I did not wish to attend my school lessons, I would convince my mother that I was unwell. In hindsight, I believe she knew I was not sick, but she would permit me to stay home. I would spend a few hours laying in her lap while she read to me. I found it very soothing. I shall now read to you.
Spock paused, looking at Jim's vital signs. Unless you have any objection. Jim lay motionless, his breathing slow and shallow.
I will read to you what she read to me.
Spock brought up the ancient Earth children's story on his pad and began reading. Alice was getting very tired of sitting by her sister on the bank and of having nothing to do. As soon as he was done with his duties, Spock went to his room for meditation and to update his log. His mind kept flitting back to Jim. He could still see him very clearly in his memories, sitting in the ready room, alert, quick thinking, but also prone to making remarks that seemed to amuse the rest of the crew. He tended to say self-deprecating things, but Spock was certain the intention was to disarm those around him. Spock made himself a hot cup of tea after his meditation. His room was very silent. He stared at his lyre and considered playing it. He thought he'd meditated enough, and playing music didn't seem to be the thing that was calling to him. He picked up his pad, his mind half made up, and left his quarters. Jim was not fooling Spock in the least when he made jokes at his own expense. Jim was an excellent strategist. That was obvious by his chess skills. Spock wondered if Jim would want to play chess while he was recuperating. Spock had only played him once. It had been surprisingly diverting and a genuine challenge. He walked down the long, brightly lit hall to the turbo lift. When the doors hissed open, he stepped in, relieved to find it empty and that no idle talk was going to be demanded of him by the customs of human courtesy. Spock walked into sick bay and made a beeline for Jim's biobed. This would be his third visit in 3 days. Spock found the chair by Jim's bed occupied. Dr. M'Benga sat with his chin tucked in his chest.
Dr. M'Benga, if you would prefer a bed,
I will sit with Lieutenant Kirk.
Dr. Mbenga sat up groggily. I was almost dreaming.
Mbenga stood slowly and nodded mid-stretch.
I would like a bed. I hadn't realized how tired I am.
Mbenga gave Spock a curious look. Are you certain you're not too tired? You've been here the last few nights,
although Sam hasn't. I think he's starting to fear the worst.
Emotions can obstruct humans, and sometimes Vulcans too, from performing their duties familia or otherwise as well as they should. Lieutenant Sam Kirk is under a great deal of duress.
Vulcans too. Well, I'm glad to hear we have so much in common.
Mbenga let out a small chuckle.
I believe my time spent with Jim Kirk will benefit him and myself.
Mbenga tilted his head, his dark eyes searching Spock's.
May I ask, how is it good for you?
I have come to understand that it is an Earth tradition to read to those that are sick, that a story was a way of providing a pleasant distraction.
Mbenga lowered his eyes and clasped his hands.
Yes, yes, that is very true.
Even if he can't follow the story, I can hope the sound of my voice will provide a sort of stimulation for him, although I don't know if that idea has any merit. It makes me feel as though I am helping the last surviving crew member of the Farragut.
Plants like music thrive even. One of my favorite patients was at her happiest when I read to her. I think what you're doing will help very much, Mr. Spock. And like you said, it's good for both of you.
Mbenga touched Spock's shoulder.
You're always full of surprises, Mr. Spock.
Am I? Spock asked, genuinely curious.
Like a hobbit, Mbenga said.
A hobbit? Spock repeated.
I'll explain it after I've had some sleep, Mbenga said, walking off.
Spock sat down in the chair next to Jim's bed. I wonder if you find it strange that we sit by your side so frequently when the computers would alert us immediately if you had any changes.
Spock placed his pad in his lap. I hope you do not mind the company.
Spock brought up the story on his screen and found where he'd left off. Shall we continue? Spock asked.
He sat back in the chair and began reading aloud, his voice low, his tones still carrying a soft, melodious quality that he picked up from his mother when she had read to him. The caterpillar and Alice looked at each other for some time in silence.
Spock knew it was getting late, but no one had come to take his place, and although Jim didn't require constant monitoring, he couldn't tear himself away. He felt like at any moment Jim Kirk could open his eyes and say something. What that something would be, Spock wasn't sure, but he would be there to hear it. He decided on one more chapter. Then he decided he would meditate until someone arrived.
If you were a Vulcan, Spock said, you could just grant me permission. I would.
Spock didn't say it aloud, nor had he suggested it to Pike or Mbenga, but the thought of a mind meld had been niggling at him since the moment he'd found Jim Kirk unconscious on the shuttle. He shook off the idea.
Spock picked up his pad. One more chapter, Lieutenant.
Spock began reading aloud. A cat may look at a king, said Alice. I've read that in some book, but I don't remember where.
Sir Archibald Weldon,
came a dry, rasping voice from the bed. Spock lowered the pad to his lap and looked at Lieutenant Kirk. Jim's eyes were cracked open.
Lieutenant, you're awake.
Spock heard a warmth in his own voice he hardly recognized. Spock stood and felt Jim reach out and grab onto his fingers.
Don't go,
Jim croaked, his voice dry and urgent. I was going to summon Dr. Mbenga and let your brother know you're awake. They've been deeply concerned.
Jim shook his head a little, his eyes shut tightly.
Please stay.
Spock pulled out his communicator, but it was unnecessary as Dr. Mbenga entered the room.
Is he awake? I just received an alert.
Mbenga was now fully awake, his eyes shining with a bright glint of hope.
Spock nodded.
Jim, slightly more lucid, adjusted his hold on Spock's hand. Spock looked down.
Jim, it's Dr. Mbenga. Can you look at me, please?
Dr. Mbenga reached down gently, pulling at Jim's eyelid. Jim turned his head away and squeezed Spock's hand. Spock felt an unexpected wave of protectiveness, which he knew was absurd.
All right, let's try something less invasive, Mbenga said, his tone positive and relaxed. He ran his tricorder near Jim. Yes, you are indeed getting stronger. There was a merriment to his tone. Fantastic, you're doing just fantastic.
I don't feel fantastic,
Jim whispered unhappily.
Would you like some water?
Mbenga had retrieved a cup and straw and gently rested the end of the straw on Jim's lower lip. Jim tilted his head away.
Mr. Spock, help him to drink. I want to get Sam in here.
Mbenga stepped away.
You need water,
Spock said simply, and rested the straw tip on Jim's lower lip as Mbenga had. Jim cracked his eyes, looking up at Spock, and parted his dry lips. Spock inserted the straw gently and watched as Jim took it and sipped, squinting up at him. Spock watched closely as Jim drained the small container of water. His eyes screwed tightly shut. His brow had developed a sheen of sweat.
I am greatly pleased that you're recovering, Spock said quietly.
Jim's eyes opened. They were glossy. The dark green looked almost slate gray. Spock stared into Jim's eyes and lifted a hand. The urge to touch his face was nearly overwhelming.
Jim?
Sam walked up to the side of the bed. His hair was askew as if he'd just woken up. He looked like he'd run from his quarters all the way to sickbay. Jim released the straw and squinted at Sam. Spock attempted to step away, but Jim wouldn't release his hand. When Spock attempted to gently pull free, Jim clenched his fingers tighter.
Sam reached over and rested his hand on Jim's shoulder and said, "It's good to see you awake. I've been losing my mind over you. You've got to stop doing crazy shit."
Sam smiled, his eyes shining with standing tears. But Jim said nothing, his mouth turning down.
"Come on, little bro. How about some water? Are you thirsty?"
"I think you're confused,"
Jim rasped slowly.
"What?"
Sam looked at Mbenga and then at Spock. Jim closed his eyes and slowly he relaxed his grip on Spock's fingers.
"Is he dying?"
Sam whispered in a panic.
"No, no, not at all. His vitals are strong. He's just very tired. Being in a coma is not the same as sleeping. He's been fighting for days now."
"Why did he say that?" Sam asked.
"It's normal to be disoriented, trust me. I saw it from a lot of soldiers in the field. Head injuries take time to heal, not to mention radiation and poisoning and being swarmed by GS-54 parasites. We're just beginning to understand what those organisms do to a human being."
Spock stepped back, folding his hands behind his back. His fingers were hot from Jim's touch.
"Why was he holding your hand?"
Sam looked at Spock, his expression a sneer.
"Spock was here when Jim awoke. He could have just as easily been holding my hand or Nurse Chapel's."
Mbenga shrugged. "He grabbed my hand and mentioned the name, Sir Archibald Weldon. I believe it has something to do with the expression, a cat may look upon a king."
Sam stared at Spock blankly.
"Captain, this is normal. There's no way to rush this sort of thing."
Mbenga glanced at Nurse Chapel, who was about to speak, but Sam cut in.
"He looks at me like I'm a stranger," Sam said miserably.
"He's disoriented. He's only woken up twice now. You need to be patient, Sam. I can't imagine how hurtful it must feel, but in time he will come around."
"Has he said anything?"
Sir Archibald Weldon.
Mbenga, Chapel, and Sam recited.
"Who?"
Pike started.
"It's a memory, an old one probably from his teenage years or even something he picked up at the academy," Mbenga said.
"Has he asked about his ship, his crew, why he's on the Enterprise?" Pike wondered if he should be the one to break the bleak news.
No, the doctor said.
He doesn't recognize me, and you're wondering if he's asking about the Farragut? Sam moaned.
Lieutenant, I'm just getting up to speed here, Captain Pike said.
Yes, sir, I'm sorry.
It's just a shock, Sam said more subduedly.
When Lieutenant Kirk was awake this morning, he wouldn't drink water and he didn't want to talk to any of us, Nurse Chapel said.
It sounds awful, but I'm telling you, it's normal, Mbenga added. Typically, I would suggest sedation to keep him calm, but he's just broken out of that coma. I think we need to give him time.
One can hope that time does, in fact, heal all wounds, Pike muttered.
Sam rolled his eyes so hard he gave himself a headache. Fortunately for him, only Nurse Chapel saw.
He seemed to like Mr. Spock, Sam said huffily.
Yes, I noticed that too, Mbenga said thoughtfully.
What?
Chapel looked at Mbenga and Sam, raising her eyebrows, eager to know more.
Spock was there when Jim woke, and Jim held on to him.
Held on to him? Chapel repeated.
Yes, he was holding on to Spock's hand the entire time he was lucid, Mbenga said.
I wonder what Spock thought of that,
Nurse Chapel mumbled.
What are you saying? That my brother imprinted on Spock like a lost duckling?
Sam raked his fingers into his hair.
What I'm saying is he's been conscious for all of 6 minutes, if you combine the two times, and yes, for some reason he trusts Spock, and whatever the cause of that is, I'm thankful for it.
Mbenga sat back in his chair, looking slightly peeved. There was a long pause in the ready room.
Fascinating, Pike said softly.
He was rewarded with small smiles from Mbenga and Chapel and received a groan from Sam.
Spock returned to the sickbay after his dinner. He skipped meditation and told himself that reading was much like meditating, and he would read to Jim unless Jim objected. Logically, now that Jim was awake, he might want something more mature, more educational and informative than an ancient children's story. Spock wondered if he could interest him in the nautical history of ancient Vulcan, or Vulcan megafauna of the Northern Hemisphere.
Spock, I was hoping you'd come by, Dr. Mbenga greeted him warmly.
And why is that, Doctor?
Spock tilted his head, hoping the answer would be brief. He wanted to see Jim, to sit beside him in shared solitude.
Because I appreciate your insights and would like to go eat my dinner.
I see. I am afraid I have no new thoughts on the matter of Lieutenant Kirk's recovery, Spock said.
No, not yet, but maybe you will later. He's awoken a few times since yesterday, but he's still very fatigued and not terribly communicative, which is to be expected.
Well, I trust you almost as much as I do, Nurse Chapel.
I'll leave you to it, Lieutenant, Mbenga said with a smile.
If you trust him as much as you trust me, Nurse Chapel said, I have some reports that need to be entered.
I said, almost, Mbenga chuckled. It was worth a shot.
Christine smiled softly at Spock.
I hadn't expected to see you, Spock said to Christine, then added, you are looking well.
Thank you. So are you. Here to check on Jim?
I thought I might read to him.
Oh, yeah? What are you going to read to him?
Nurse Chapel walked to the area where Jim was now being held for his recovery. It was closed off with frosted dividers from the rest of sickbay.
I had yet to decide, but perhaps you have some suggestions.
All I've been reading are medical journals that focus on the recovery of patients from comas and amnesia.
Christine tipped her chin up in the direction of Sam Kirk. Sam Kirk was sunk deep into a chair, his arms loosely folded across his chest. He snored lightly. Asleep in the bio bed, Jim Kirk looked as pale as marble. Spock knew Jim's pallor was just an illusion of the lighting, but it made him feel a prickle of anxiety.
I wonder how long it's been since these two had a slumber party, Christine joked.
What symptoms of amnesia has Lieutenant Kirk exhibited, if any? Spock asked, his eyes still on Jim.
Confusion and disorientation, the inability to recognize people, that can all be tied to normal characteristics of coma patients first waking up.
But there are other behavioral traits you have witnessed? Spock asked, wishing Christine would speak more directly and quickly. He wanted to understand. Jim's head tilted toward the sound of their voices at the same instant Sam stirred in his chair and turned to see Chaplain Spock standing at the foot of Jim's bio bed.
Hi, Sam said, sitting up and rolling his neck. He rubbed an eye and looked at Jim.
Come to visit Sleeping Beauty? Sam asked as he stood up and stretched his arms over his head. Jim's eyes opened. Spock observed that Jim had the fussy expression of a very young child.
He wakes.
Sam sat down and reached over, touching Jim's hand. Jim pulled his hand away.
You're okay, buddy, Sam said.
Nurse Chapel went around to the other side and addressed Jim calmly.
Hi, Jim. It's me. I'm Nurse Chapel. We're on the Enterprise. Do you remember when you woke up before?
She lifted her eyes to Spock and asked, Do you remember me or maybe Spock? Sam squeezed Jim's shoulder, attempting to soothe him, and asked, Do you want some water? Spock retrieved a small cup of water and held it out toward Jim. Jim stared at the cup with an air of concentration. His eyes followed Spock's fingers to his hand, to his wrist, up his arm, and then to the Vulcan's face. The two of them were briefly locked in each other's gaze. Spock attempted to read Jim's face, eager to know if Jim was now clearer of mind or if he was suffering. Jim looked uncertain, but the tension in his brow relaxed a little and he closed his hand around the cup.
Have a sip, Jim. You'll feel better, Sam said.
Glad to see that Jim was able to hold the cup. It was more than he'd done for days.
I don't know who you're talking to.
Jim croaked out the words, slowly turning his head to look at Sam.
I'm talking to you, Jim, Sam said, sitting forward.
I'm Jim?
Jim's voice was ragged and full of disbelief.
And you are?
Sam, your brother?
You're my brother?
Jim looked rather vexed in Spock's opinion.
Sam, maybe this isn't the time, Nurse Chapel said softly.
You need to fix this.
Sam pointed at Nurse Chapel and then demanded, Where's Mbenga?
Sam stood up, his eyes searching past the divider that kept Jim's bio bed private. Spock thought he should leave. This had become more of a private family moment. He felt a wave of disturbing emotions rolling beneath the surface of his mind. To lose one's mind. To no longer be certain of what is real and what is not. To question your own identity and reality. It was all too familiar to him.
Dr. Mbenga?
Sam was headed to the main part of sickbay. Christine looked at Spock.
Spock, stay with Jim, please.
Nurse Chapel, Spock began to protest, but she'd already turned the corner hot on Sam's heels.
Spock,
Jim said, his voice a whispering creak.
Yes, Lieutenant.
Spock looked.
Lieutenant?
Jim blinked and shook his head.
Did you bring your book?
No. Do you recall me having a book? Jim paused, then said,
No, but you were reading to me.
Spock sat down. That is correct. Do you wish me to continue? Spock inquired softly. He could hear a heated discussion going on between Sam and Christine, not quite shouting, more of a whispering and hissing.
Yeah.
Jim shakily drew the cup to his lips and splashed more water on his face than he drank. Spock reached over and steadied Jim's hand to help him. It was a brief moment, but as Jim's expression softened while he sipped, Spock felt his growing tension melt. As if we were bonded, Spock thought, and found the idea both shocking and bizarre.
I know you cannot remember when I found you on the shuttle. You were unconscious. This was before we brought you here. Lieutenant La'an and I were beamed over to retrieve you. You had severe head trauma. Your environmental suit's oxygen was down to 1.5%, and you had blood loss as well. Your suit had been punctured just below your ribs when a blast caused by a warp core had blown shrapnel through your shuttle. Your heart had nearly ceased to beat.
You were surrounded by a swarm of GS-54. They were in your helmet, feeding off the electricity your body generates and uses for your brain functions. You are astonishingly resilient. Spock paused, wondering if he might be overwhelming Jim, but Jim's eyes looked calm as he listened. You were also exposed to radiation blast waves from the breached warp core of the Farragut. You are healing now, and it will take time. Jim reached up and rested his hand on Spock's and watched him attentively. Spock heard Dr. Mbenga's voice chiding Christine and Sam. He'd returned from his very short reprieve from sickbay. Spock sat down beside Jim, deciding he would not leave, not because of Chapel's request, but because he did not wish to leave Jim's side. I am very grateful you're here now and alive. Your name is James Tiberius Kirk. New scans have shown that there are lesions of the hippocampus, which is making it impossible for solid connection to the cortex. We think this is a remnant of the damage done by the GS-54 organism. But the good news is it appears to be regenerating rapidly. I think at this point it's safe to say that he's experiencing post-traumatic amnesia, and it's affecting his episodic memories, but hopefully nothing beyond that. Dr. Mbenga wanted a vacation. A very long one. And if that couldn't be arranged, he'd retire. So I think the takeaway here is that Jim's brain is regenerating and his amnesia should be temporary. Are there any other symptoms of amnesia that he's exhibiting? Pike looked from Dr. Mbenga to Nurse Chapel. He's a little clingy. That falls under childlike behavior, Nurse Chapel said, thinking of Spock and how Jim seemed so much calmer in his company and how he was prone to holding Spock's hand. I see nothing too concerning, then. By the way, where's Sam? Pike realized for the first time that Sam wasn't there, and he'd been at all of the meetings regarding Jim's medical status since they'd rescued him. We had to do a minor medical procedure on him unexpectedly earlier. He's recovering, Nurse Chapel said. On Sam? Pike sat up a little straighter. Just a little reconstructive rhinoplasty, Dr. Mbenga added helpfully. What happened? Pike asked. Not sure he wanted to know, but it was his job to know. Well, as it is a common symptom of amnesia and episodic memory loss, Nurse Chapel started, combined with traumatic head injuries, and Mbenga chipped in. Jim has been irritable, Chapel said thoughtfully. Aggressive, Mbenga said with his eyebrows raised. When Sam placed a tray in Jim's lap this morning, Jim didn't want to eat. Sam told him to eat, and Jim answered by hitting him in the nose with the tray. It was truly astonishing. His reflexes are recovering with astounding speed, Chapel said, looking meaningfully at Pike. Excellent progress on fully regaining his motor skills, yes, Mbenga nodded at Chapel. Should he be restrained? Pike asked. Yes, but he's not. Not at the moment. Spock has a very good rapport with Jim, Dr. Mbenga said, sitting back comfortably in his chair. He was getting used to working in the ready room and found it a nice change from his office in the sick bay. Dr. Mbenga, I will ask you to please not shanghai my science officer into becoming your new nurse, Pike said. Not a bad idea, Nurse Chapel smiled at Dr. Mbenga. He's there by his own free will, but if you require him on the bridge, then by all means, Mbenga said generously. I'll send for him the second we need him, Pike replied and stood up. Speaking of which, it's high time I was back on the bridge. A few hours earlier. Spock had just set foot on the bridge that morning when La'an stepped up to him. With me, please. Where are we going? I just got a request for you from Nurse Chapel, La'an said, stepping into the turbolift. Why is my presence required? Spock asked calmly as he stepped back into the turbolift. Well, I guess we'll find out. I think Christine called you the Jim Whisperer. I'm coming along as a security matter. For what reason is it a security matter? Spock asked. Because our friend Jim apparently just smashed his tray into his brother's nose. La'an stood next to Spock in silence for the rest of the short journey.
As they entered the hall that led to the sickbay, La'an looked at Spock. "What do you say to Jim that keeps him so calm?"
"I've said very little to him," Spock said softly. "Maybe it is that I ask nothing of him."
"What could people possibly be asking of him? He's still recovering," La'an remarked.
"When one is in the care of healers and doctors, there are many demands made. When to sleep, what tests to be submitted to, when to eat."
"I suppose that is true," La'an nodded. When they entered the sick bay, Sam was laid back on a bio bed while Nurse Chapel worked at mending the skin and bones of his nose. Sam's uniform was stained with bright blood, and his eyes were watering intensely as he lay as still as he could.
"We don't need you here, Lieutenant. It was an accident," Sam said grumpily.
"It looks like Jim has truly excellent accidental aim with the tray," La'an remarked.
"It's protocol to let security know when someone's been attacked, even if it wasn't exactly intentional," Dr. Mbenga said, picking up his pad.
"It looks intentional," La'an added with a soft smirk.
"Jim's just not himself right now," Nurse Chapel shrugged. "He's disoriented and suffering from amnesia."
"Amnesia?" La'an frowned.
"We believe it's temporary," Nurse Chapel added. Spock went behind the room divider, where he found Jim in his bio bed. The bed was propped up so that he was in a sitting position. His wrists were restrained. His expression was blank. His eyes flicked to Spock.
"Untie me," Jim said.
His voice, Spock noted, had lost its rasp. Spock said nothing. He merely went about taking the restraints off. Jim sighed heavily and leaned back into his mattress.
"Thank you," he said as he rubbed his wrists.
"Have you been restrained long?"
Spock asked, sitting beside Jim.
"No," Jim sighed, "but I hate it."
"You assaulted your brother," Spock observed.
"I did. I mean, I lost my temper."
"Is he really my brother?"
"Yes, Lieutenant, I'm afraid so," Spock said.
A smirk teased at the corner of Jim's mouth. Spock lifted his chin just a fraction. It was the closest thing he'd seen to a smile on Jim's face for a very long time. Jim's stomach made a harsh gurgling sound. Spock stood up.
"Are you leaving already?" Jim asked.
"You require food. It will aid in your recovery." Spock paused. "What would you like to eat?"
Jim paused. A small smile quirked in the corner of his mouth.
"Chicken noodle soup?"
"I shall bring it to you," Spock said, and stepped away. Jim wanted to tell him he wasn't hungry, but he knew he needed to eat, and he also knew Spock was trying to help him. Everything was so loud and bright, and he didn't know anyone there. Spock told him he'd been rescued from a shuttle, that he'd been severely injured. Jim believed him. Spock made him feel grounded. It was as if, with Spock nearby, he wouldn't float off into space and get lost again. Sam was loud, bossy, and weird. Jim rubbed at his wrists again. He hadn't meant to blow up at Sam. It didn't feel right that he'd hit him with the tray. Jim had just felt so angry. Spock returned with the tray of food. The sick bay had grown quiet. Spock set the tray over Jim's lap and picked up a spoon. "I lowered the lights, and the sickbay is nearly empty now."
"That's why it's so quiet," Jim said.
Spock looked at Jim and could see that he found the quiet and dim lighting more peaceful. "Please eat." Jim picked up the spoon and tasted the soup. It was savory and familiar. It was full of chunks of synthesized chicken and noodles. After several mouthfuls of soup, Jim set down his spoon. His stomach lurched and then settled.
"I think that's all I can do for now."
Spock took the tray and set it on the table. Jim looked drowsy. Spock picked up his pad and hesitated.
"Is it story time?" Jim asked, setting his head back against the pillow.
"I could read to you if you like," Spock said.
"I would like that. I like the sound of your voice."
Jim reached over and closed his fingers around Spock's hand. I might fall asleep, but please just stay here for a little while.
Chapter 2. Recovery.
Jim's day started on the Enterprise by getting out of bed. Walking was getting easier. He moved in a slow circle around the sick bay as Dr. Mbenga followed him, checking his vitals. Last night's scan has revealed rapid healing throughout your brain. I also noticed that your sleep patterns are getting better. Do you remember any of your dreams from last night?
Jim completed the loop around sick bay and sat down looking at Dr. Mbenga.
I don't, Jim lied.
Well, give it time, Mbenga said evenly. We may have to send you to a specialist. There's not much more we can do for you here, medically speaking.
You mean send me away from the Enterprise? Jim asked, thinking only of Spock.
Of course, you can consult with Sam, but if there are better treatments that will help you recover your memories, it would behoove us to get you relocated as soon as possible.
Jim nodded.
Sam still feels like a stranger, as does everyone.
Captain Pike wants to see you. Are you feeling up for it?
Spock said I am a lieutenant on a ship named the Farragut.
Yes, Dr. Mbenga replied carefully.
I looked it up. It's gone, isn't it?
It is. I was waiting for Captain Pike to discuss that with you.
I'm the sole survivor? Jim asked slowly.
You are. Dr. Mbenga touched Jim's shoulder.
I'd like to see the captain now, Jim said resolutely.
I'll have Nurse Chapel take you, Dr. Mbenga replied.
Nurse Chapel walked with Lieutenant Kirk down the hall and to the turbolift.
You're looking good, moving well too.
Thanks. I still feel a little off balance sometimes, Jim said distractedly. Like I'm going to trip on nothing, or just float up as if the gravity's been shut off.
Vertigo is a common part of head trauma. I wouldn't worry about it just yet, Chapel said encouragingly.
Jim folded his hands behind his back and drew a slow breath. When the doors opened, he was face to face with the blackness of space. Stars and distant planets tilted past. Small blue insects swarmed around him like fireflies. They buzzed in his ears. Their light was becoming blinding.
Jim?
Jim turned and saw Chapel looking at him.
Are you feeling all right?
She started to lift her tricorder. He gently put his hand on it, lowering it.
I'm fine, Jim said carefully. Just a little dizzy.
Do I need to take you back to your bio bed? I can't have you fainting.
No, thanks. Let's go see the captain.
Nurse Chapel shook her head, lifted her tricorder and scanned him.
Jim sighed and waited.
Okay. When we get there, I want you seated. And when your meeting's done, I want you to be escorted back. If that means I need to come back here myself, I will do it.
Yes, nurse, Jim said with a small, playful smile.
Are you flirting?
Chapel laughed.
That's a good sign. You're going to be back to normal in no time.
Who said I was flirting? Jim chuckled.
Since when is being compliant considered flirting?
Let's see. Maybe when a lieutenant says, yes, nurse.
Chapel batted her eyes at Jim.
I did not do whatever that was, Jim laughed.
Sure, Jim.
Chapel smiled.
She was glad to hear him laugh, but also deeply concerned about his dizzy spell. She suspected he was underplaying whatever it was he had just experienced.
Jim sat down across from Captain Christopher Pike and Commander Una Chin Riley. Jim only knew their full names because he'd read up on them and the entirety of the ship's crew, trying to prepare for a meeting when you remembered nothing other than you should prepare for a meeting with a captain. Wasn't much to work with, but it was all he could think to do.
Captain, if someone could make sure that Lieutenant Kirk gets back to sick bay in one piece, please,
Chapel said, lingering at the door.
Yes, of course, Pike nodded.
I think I can figure it out, Jim said quietly.
I don't doubt it.
Pike gave Chapel a nod, indicating that she could leave, and then turned his focus back to Jim.
"It's good to see you, Jim," Pike said.
Jim could tell he meant it. The room had a large table that was glossy and clean. It was bright, but not as blinding as some of the other spaces on the Enterprise. Jim looked down at his hands. Everything was new, and it was hard not to get distracted.
"It's good to be here. I want to thank you and the crew for my rescue. I know Lieutenant Spock and Lieutenant Noonien Singh were the ones that boarded the shuttle, but it was you who gave the orders and your crew that got your ship here in the first place."
"You would have done the same for me," Pike said.
"I'm happy to see you up and about," Commander Chin Riley said.
"Thank you, Commander," Jim said. Pike looked at Jim and said, "I've read Dr. Mbenga's reports and Nurse Chapel's too. They say you're healing rapidly, that you had a rough couple of first interactions, but you're calm and in control now."
"Oh, yeah, I think I was a little difficult at first," Jim smiled meekly.
"I still feel a bit discombobulated, detached almost, like my equilibrium is playing catch-up."
"And your memories?"
Una Chin Riley asked, her brow raised sympathetically.
"Not a whole lot of them yet," Jim said honestly.
"I have the full report of the last 24 hours at the Farragut and on the mission to rescue you. This is a lot of information to process, literally and figuratively. I wouldn't want you to go over this now if it was up to me, but the Admiral is gunning for an interview with you."
"He wants a play-by-play of the events that cost him a ship from an amnesiac?
I realize that this is most likely just protocol as far as he's concerned. I think in the first 2 minutes he's going to realize I'm just reading him the reports while you sit next to me."
"If that's what it takes, Captain, let's do it," Jim said.
Christopher Pike nodded. "I thought that would be your take on the matter." When the Admiral appeared on screen, he and Jim briefly spoke. It was clear to Jim that the Admiral had access to the exact same reports that Captain Pike had, and that this was all just some bureaucratic little dance. Jim's mood darkened swiftly. He took slow breaths in and out, half listening to his superior officers talk about him as if he wasn't there in the room. He knew it wasn't a callous gesture of them being cruel. He knew Christopher making sure he was present for the meeting was most likely a way to protect him from any false charges of negligence or charges of misconduct. That didn't make Jim feel any better, though. He wanted to leave. He was tired. He wondered where Spock was. Spock was nice to be around. He had a pleasant voice. He was gentle and calm. He didn't speak to Jim like he was an invalid or had nerves made of glass. Jim didn't know if he liked the sound of his name. It didn't feel right or wrong, just strange. "Who is Jim?" he wondered. Surely Jim doesn't hit his brother in the face with a tray. "James Tiberius Kirk." Jim played the name over and over in his head. There was so much he didn't remember, and Chapel and Benga said to give it time, but how much time would it take?
"Jim?"
"Lieutenant Kirk." Jim looked up and realized that the Admiral was addressing him.
"Yes, Admiral."
"I think this meeting is premature. I can tell the accident has taken its toll on you."
Jim nodded.
"I'm afraid I'm having some difficulty focusing." "Dr. Mbenga did advise, which I told you, that Lieutenant Kirk needs more time to recover." Christopher Pike spoke sternly. The Admiral sat up straighter.
"Pike, if ever I didn't want to hear and I told you so, now is the time."
"Noted," Pike replied. "We'll schedule another meeting in the near future." Jim nodded and stopped following the conversation between his superiors. He closed his eyes and found himself sitting at a bar counter. He was in the port galley. He knew it was on the Enterprise. Across the way, Spock was playing chess with Nurse Chapel. She was smiling. Spock sat across from her, eyes not on the board but on her. There was music playing. It was jazz. Big band. Jim recognized it. Classical jazz, something that wasn't too popular on the Farragut, but it was refreshing to hear it played here after so long. Christine gently ran her index finger along the back of Spock's hand when he moved a piece on the board. Spock's eyes flicked up to hers, his cheeks darkening with the flush of faint green.
Jim?
Pike said, resting his hands on Jim's shoulders. Jim looked up. Captain Pike was leaning over him. The doors to the ready room slid open and Nurse Chapel entered carrying her medical equipment.
Yes, Captain?
Sorry, I was just remembering something.
That's good, Unichin Riley said, her voice a bit strained.
It is good. You were checked out for a minute there, Captain Pike said, looking relieved.
More like five, Una said, but we're glad to have you back.
Nurse Chapel approached.
I'm glad I was so close by. How are you feeling, Jim?
Pike stepped away so Nurse Chapel could check Jim's vitals. Jim looked at Christine Chapel and felt a tidal wave of emotions crash over him. He all but launched himself out of the chair.
I'm fine, Commander, Captain.
Jim nodded at Una and Christopher and exited the doors.
Slow down, Jim. That's an order, Pike said.
Jim stopped, just at the door as Christine Chapel caught up with him. Jim opened and closed his fists, looking everywhere, but at anyone's face, his eyes blinking rapidly.
Jim, can you take a slow breath in for me?
Nurse Chapel asked.
I just need some space, Jim said quickly.
We need to know you're all right, Pike said.
Clearly I'm not, okay?
Jim snapped.
Jim,
Pike said. But before he could get out another word, Jim raised his hands.
I'm sorry, Captain. I'm not myself.
I know. Let's get you back to your bed. Pike spoke low and soft.
I can walk, Jim said slowly.
I'll walk with you in Nurse Chapel, Una said. She glanced at Pike over her shoulder, who nodded his approval.
Get some rest, Captain Pike said.
He was furious with himself for going against his better judgment to appease Admiral April. Jim was in far worse shape than anyone had imagined. Reports, scans, all the numbers and data in the world weren't the same as witnessing how different Jim was, how unwell. Jim was still in there, that was obvious. But would he ever recover himself?
What are we if not our memories? Pike thought.
Pike made his way to the bridge. He promised himself the next time he saw Jim, he would tell him that he understood how lost he was feeling and how frustrated. Pike would share his experiences of total memory loss on Rigel 7 with Jim. It might be cold comfort, but it was all he could think to do. Spock ate dinner in his quarters. He updated his personal log and then he reluctantly sat to meditate afterward. The reluctance was a sign that he needed very badly to resume his routine. Upon the timed completion, he wasn't certain he was sensing any of the immediate benefits, but that was to be expected. Repeated meditation over a long period of time, done at regular intervals, always yielded the best results. He was surprised he needed to remind himself of that and attributed it to his desire to visit with Jim Kirk. Desire was different from need, much more based on emotions or the physical. The last thought gave him pause.
Spock, Jim said when his friend rounded the corner entering the small space that was Jim's room for recovering. I need a favor.
Jim ran his hands over his knees. He was in loose black trousers and a dark green woven sweater. He was looking a little thin. Spock wondered if Dr. Mbenga or Nurse Chapel found this concerning.
I want you to do a mind meld with me. That's what they're called, right?
You believe I will be able to help expedite your recovery. Spock looked Jim in the eyes and went on, and you may be right. But there are what you might call side effects. There's a physical toll on the mind. You may also find it could potentially make your condition worse.
I've been reading up on mind melds, and I realize that there's going to be a lot of things shared between us, private things, that I will keep private. I just need to know. I need to remember. I need to be able to report to the Admiral exactly what happened.
He knows what happened, Lieutenant. Of that, I'm certain. Also, based on your history as a Starfleet officer, there's no question as to whether or not you performed your duties.
Jim stood up and paced.
So you're not going to help me?
I can help you in other ways.
Spock watched as Jim prowled a small corner of the enclosed room.
You need to give your mind more time to heal.
I hate this,
Jim said, clenching his fist.
Jim shoved the chair out of his way and walked around the bed in a sharp arch. I don't want to be here anymore.
In sickbay or on the Enterprise?
Jim looked at Spock. The thought of not being on the Enterprise where Spock was had not entered his mind at all.
Sickbay, Jim answered.
Spock nodded. Why not ask Dr. Mbenga to have you relocated to private quarters, or perhaps Sam's quarters?
Do you think he'd let me?
Jim asked distractedly.
He wondered why Spock wouldn't perform a mind meld with him. He worried maybe he'd done something in the past to offend Spock.
I am not a medical doctor, Spock said.
Jim frowned and shook his head a little.
I know Sam's my brother,
but I don't feel it, you know.
He feels like a stranger.
I don't want to be shoved into his quarters like an unwanted house guest.
No. Perhaps my quarters will suffice?
Spock rested his hand over his side. For some strange reason, his pulse had quickened.
Fascinating, he mumbled to himself.
Yes, I think if I can't have my own room, yes, I'd appreciate it.
Jim felt his face flushing.
Thank you for the suggestion.
Jim scrubbed his hands over his cheeks. He could feel them radiating, and he was blushing hard.
Excuse me.
Jim stepped into the fresher and shut the door. He set the room temperature lower by 10 degrees and sat in the small, quiet space. He stayed there in the silent, cool room. He rubbed his eyes roughly. He knew he was attracted to Spock, but it felt incongruous with the rest of his life. He didn't know himself what kind of man he was. Certainly Spock didn't know him very well. He ran his hand over his head and remembered his mother doing the same.
I know you miss your father, and I know he misses you too.
His mother stroked his head as he sat on the corner of an old sofa, picking loose threads from the armrest. She rested her hand over his hand, stilling his fingers.
Sam's going to run the grill. Can you imagine? You boys are growing up so fast.
His mother pressed a kiss into his brow. She smelled of lemongrass and lilac powder.
Come on, let's see if he needs our help.
Sam will just tell me I'm in the way, Jim had snuffled.
He's just trying to show you he can take care of you.
I'll show him, Jim had grumbled. He could still hear the soft chuckle his mother had released in his ear before kissing his temple.
You're a good boy, and you're very smart. Now try being patient, too.
Jim heard a tentative knocking.
Jim, are you well?
Spock's voice came from the other side of the door. Jim stood up, pressed his palm to the door, and leaned his cheek to the cool surface.
Yes, one sec.
When Jim stepped out, he saw Spock and Dr. Mbenga waiting. His cheeks began to blush all over again.
Doctor, I would like to be released from sickbay, Jim said in a rush.
I feel like there's a little too much activity in here, and I would rest better in a quieter space, one with less foot traffic.
I can see the sense in that, but I'm not sure you should be alone, Dr. Mbenga said.
He's welcome to stay in my quarters, Spock interjected.
Are you sure about that, Spock? Jim's still having trouble managing his temper, Nurse Chapel said.
Jim looked up at her. He hadn't realized she was there. He felt a flash of anger, but it wasn't just anger, it was jealousy.
Jim sighed and looked up at the ceiling.
That's true, I did assault my brother. And I know I've been challenging to work with on a couple of occasions. He looked at Nurse Chapel, a small guilty smile pulling at the corners of his mouth.
Anger or emotional outbursts are common with head trauma.
But you do seem more in control of yourself lately, Dr. Mbenga observed.
Just sitting alone in the fresher, Jim gestured to the door. It was quiet in there, and I remembered my mother sitting in a house we lived in Iowa. I could almost feel the woven fabric of the couch.
Jim rubbed his thumb and index finger together. He drew a breath, but the sense of his memory were not as real as they had been just a moment ago. But they were real memories.
That's great news, Dr. Mbenga remarked. I knew you would start getting your memories back. It may be a little overwhelming at times.
If I feel overwhelmed or distressed, I can come to sickbay, Jim said.
Can we agree that it is for the best? Spock interjected. Jim will stay in my quarters, where he will have a quiet space throughout the majority of the day.
I guess if anyone can handle a temper tantrum from this guy, Nurse Chapel said, punching Jim playfully in the shoulder.
It won't happen again, Jim said, holding up his palms.
I will make certain that the room is cleared of any potential weapons.
I'm not going to attack you, Jim said helplessly.
Yeah, don't forget that dagger on the wall, Nurse Chapel quipped.
You have a dagger on the wall?
Dr. Mbenga looked quizzically at Spock.
It is ceremonial, from Vulcan. A family heirloom, Spock said.
Jim looked at Nurse Chapel and wondered how much time she had spent in Spock's quarters.
Sam walked with Jim down the corridors to Spock's quarters.
Jim felt strange leaving the sickbay with no personal effects. Whatever belonged to him was blown to smithereens with the Farragut. His things had been reduced to debris, and it was just so much junk floating out in space. He still didn't have any real feelings about the loss of the Farragut and her crew, but he knew he was a fool if he thought the numbness and ignorance of those memories and his feelings would last forever.
So you're going to stay with Spock until they're certain you're clear-headed enough to be on your own, Sam said, relaying what Dr. Mbenga had said.
His quarters are bigger than mine. Otherwise, I'd insist you stay with me.
I remembered something about you, Jim interrupted.
Sam slowed down.
Oh, yeah? Anything good?
Yeah. You're pretty good on a grill.
You grilled corn on the cob, some foiled asparagus, hot dogs too, and then you, me, and Mom sat by the fire and ate.
Father's Day? Sam said, frowning.
I guess so. I don't have any memories of our father being there.
Then it was definitely Father's Day, Sam said.
I just remember that you were grilling. I wanted to help, but Mom said you were showing us, or me, that you could take care of us and to let you handle it.
I don't know. I think you were showing off, Jim chuckled.
All the kids from school have been talking about what they were going to do with their fathers and grandfathers. That's why I demanded to use the grill. Some weird holdover tradition from ages ago. The food was good, but Mom's s'mores stole the show. I think you burned more marshmallows than you actually ate that night.
Pretty sure I ate the burnt ones, too.
Jim smiled, looking down.
He could almost taste the flavor of charcoal and burnt sugar sticking to the back of his teeth.
How old were we?
I'm not sure.
Mom would know. She was always keeping journals and sending Dad updates as to our momentous achievements. Have you remembered anything else? Sam asked.
Just flashes.
It's like trying to grab onto water, Jim said.
He looked at Sam and for the first time felt like he was looking at his brother, and smiled.
Here we are, Sam said, looking at the doors to Spock's quarters.
Do me a favor and keep on the lieutenant's good side. He's my boss, after all.
Sam patted Jim firmly on the back.
I'll do my best, Jim promised.
Jim sat on the edge of his new bed. It was much nicer than the one he'd been assigned in sickbay. Spock's room was quiet. It was warm in there, but not too hot. Sam hadn't left long ago, and Spock was due to return to his quarters from duty soon. Jim occupied his time by making his bed. He synthesized a cinnamon and hot chocolate drink with marshmallows on top. Jim paced the room, taking in the space. It was organized, but not cold.
It didn't reveal much about Spock, but there were some things displayed that clearly were from Vulcan. Spock's bed was just to his left of Jim's. The space where Spock's neatly made bed was felt like it was the next room over, even though it was just one large space. Jim imagined the space his bed was taking up was normally set up like a sitting area, an office. He held his hot concoction under his nose and inhaled deeply. He was hoping the sense would awaken some memories. Sam had suggested it. Jim took a sip. It tasted familiar, sweet and rich, with the earthy flavor of chocolate and a little bite of heat from the cinnamon. It was pleasant enough, but no memories came tumbling back. The doors hissed open and Spock entered. His face was placid as he took in his new roommate. "Thank you for doing this," Jim said. "I'm pleased to be of assistance," Spock said. "It's nice in here," Jim said. "Normally, I would have my dinner now and then update my personal log followed by meditation. Please, do your thing. Routine. Have you eaten?" Spock asked. "Not yet. I hadn't been thinking about food." "I could eat," Jim said, feeling like a bad house guest, although he wasn't sure why. Spock walked over to the food synthesizer. He wasn't sure what Jim would want to eat, so he selected one of his own pre-programmed meals and duplicated it. "Hopefully you will find this acceptable," Spock said. "I'm not a picky eater, if that's what you're concerned about," Jim said, walking over to stand next to Spock. Jim watched as Spock prepared their plates and glasses. They sat at a tabletop that slid seamlessly from the wall just beneath the food synthesizer. Spock laid out their meals and Jim wrangled the chairs for them both. The two of them ate in silence for a while. Spock felt comforted by this simple domestic ritual. He'd not deliberately shared a meal since the captain's last dinner. Normally, he ate alone. He found eating with others to be disruptive to his meal, and yet having Jim there with him felt companionable, even in silence. Spock was pleasantly surprised when Jim collected their empty plates. He had worried that Jim would be just as messy as his brother Sam. "Let me clear these up," Jim had said breezily. "Thank you," Spock replied. "I feel out of the loop," Jim hesitated. "Or like I should be doing something useful." "You are healing. That is very useful," Spock replied. Jim nodded, unsure of how to respond to that. "I recall that you play chess." "A recovered memory?" There was a hint of enthusiasm in Spock's voice. "Yeah, I remembered seeing you playing chess in the port galley with Nurse Chapel. Maybe we could have a match after your meditation?" "Yes," Spock said, before taking a sip of water. Jim knew himself to be a good player. He could feel it in his bones. Just the thought of a match with Spock was making his fingers itch. Jim awoke from a deep sleep. He sat up groggily in bed to find that Spock had already left for his shift. Jim went into the fresher. The face reflected in the mirror was pale and had the beginnings of a beard. He scrubbed his cheeks with his fingers, peering at his eyes. The right eye still had some traces of red from broken blood vessels. "You look like rough James Tiberius Kirk." Saying his name aloud felt right. James Tiberius Kirk. Three short names that added up to a mouthful. He decided he preferred Jim. "That's your name, buddy." He trimmed his beard and then shaved his face clean. Standing back from the mirror, he peered at himself and pulled up his shirt. There was a pink streak of a scar running up the right side of his stomach, stopping just below his ribs. He turned his back to the mirror and peered over his shoulder. There was a smaller scar on his lower back. He didn't remember how he'd gotten that scar, but it was old. "How the hell am I still alive?" When Jim walked into sickbay, Dr. Mbenga set down his pad on a table and walked towards him. "I was beginning to think you'd forgotten about our check-ins." "No, I just overslept." Dr. Mbenga gestured to the bio bed, and Jim sat and let Mbenga run his tests.
As the doctor went about scanning him and checking his vitals, Jim let his mind drift. He'd slept hard and without waking for several hours. He couldn't remember the last time he'd rested so deeply. He had felt safe being close to Spock. He thought about their first chess match the night before. After Spock's meditation, which Jim had spent reading up on the last few hours of the Farragut, they sat for a chess match.
"You will be white," Spock had said.
"You're giving me the starting advantage?"
"Yes," Spock said simply, as he turned the board so it was lined up between them just so.
"Suits me," Jim had said, with a shrug, and moved his first piece. Spock barely glanced at the board and moved his piece with certainty. No second guesses, not even a glimmer of a pause. Jim smiled to himself. He liked a confident player. It was sexy. "How old were you when you started playing?"
"I was taught to play when I was 4 years of age," Spock replied.
"Four?" Jim nodded. "I didn't start until I was 8. But I did win the state championship when I was 12, so don't worry about me."
"I had a similar experience when I was 9 years, 7 months, and 14 days old. It was a regional competition. It was an experience I found very educational."
"What did it teach you?"
"That it is greatly satisfying to surpass those that mocked me for being different."
Jim tipped his head. "Mocked you? For being half-human?"
"Yes, it is your turn," Spock said.
Jim moved a pawn, keeping the pace slow and easy. Spock released a knight immediately. "That's the most illogical thing I've ever heard of happening on Vulcan. If I'd gone to school with you, I would have thought you were a miracle, maybe even magical."
"Neither of those things are logical," Spock said, his eyes on the board.
"No, but I would have, and I'm a human. So I didn't have to be logical all the time, and when I was a kid, I was really good at not following the rules of logic or common sense."
Jim laughed. "You remember this?"
Jim paused. He could see himself climbing on the roof, running through fields of corn, and drawing maps of the stars in his cramped bedroom. "I'm remembering a lot now." He smiled softly. "Old stuff. Things from living in Iowa before we moved.
Moved to Tarsus IV.
Jim took a slow breath. His head was aching violently suddenly.
"Are you unwell?" Spock asked.
His tone neutral, but he reached out and touched Jim's forearm. Jim shook his head. "No, and it's my move. Stop trying to distract me."
He winked at Spock playfully and then decided on a more aggressive approach and slid his rook across the board, threatening Spock's knight.
"Your move, Mr. Spock."
Spock slowly withdrew his hand and looked at the board. "That is an interesting approach."
"You mean illogical? Or maybe even emotional?"
Spock looked up at Jim, his brow twitching. "I am enjoying this match."
"Good, because I'm going to win. And don't want you to be sour about it," Jim said with a smile.
Jim had lost, but it had been close.
"You seem a bit distracted," Dr. Mbenga said.
"I am. I've been remembering things. Nothing this morning, but last night I did. Childhood memories, some of my teen years, too."
"We should get you set up with the counselor."
"Not yet. I'm all right. I still want some time to myself," Jim said.
"I'm going to trust you on this, but please don't take what you've experienced as a small matter. Trauma, both physical and emotional, can pack quite a wallop," Dr. Mbenga cautioned.
"Oh, I am aware," Jim said. After Jim's appointment with Dr. Mbenga ended, Jim found his way to the C-deck. Memories were drifting in and out of focus. Jim tried to hold on to them, but he just felt like he was chasing shadows, or worse, delusional. He needed to move. Jim entered the gymnasium. He wasn't sure if he had found the gym because he knew where it should be or because he remembered. There was a garment synthesizer inside the gym next to the freshers, which Jim took advantage of. He got himself something comfortable to work out in and some athletic shoes. He changed quickly and neatly folded his clothes in a pile next to his boots. He felt jittery, like he'd consumed several liters of caffeine. Weapons lined the walls, and while he had some experience with fencing foils and sabers, he would prefer to have a sparring partner for judo. There was no one else in the gym, and he didn't think he should bother the captain or Commander Chin Riley to ask what martial arts they knew, and if they thought it would be fun to go a few rounds. Jim grunted out of frustration and started stretching. He could do something simple. He tried to muster up some enthusiasm for running on a treadmill, but it just wasn't in him. He found some jump ropes that looked familiar hanging in a cabinet with other sports equipment. They weren't on display, like the finer and more dangerous exercise equipment. He grabbed the rope. With the first skip, he remembered being at the academy, showing off to some of the other students working out at the gym. He had never been interested in boxing. Not many people were at the academy, but he'd learned how to do a boxer's skip and the heel-toe jump. He alternated rhythms as he slowly built up speed. The humming, whipping of the rope was hypnotic. He didn't know how much longer he would be kept on the Enterprise, how much time he had left in close proximity with his brother, with Captain Pike, who felt more like a mentor and friend than a stranger now. It was confusing, not knowing what was a memory and what was new. His emotions felt instinctual but not trustworthy. While most would describe Vulcans as cold or aloof, no one had made him feel safer or more welcomed. Spock was, of course, more than a half-Vulcan and human. He was an individual with depths of compassion Jim found rare and compelling. They would soon be on separate paths. Jim's stomach cramped lightly. The rope hummed as he sped up, his feet barely clearing the ground, the soft snapping of the rope on the gym's padded floor. Tap, 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 tap. He could do it. He was going to remember it all. Then he would be reassigned, put back on the command track, and assigned a new starship. He would persevere. But sooner than later, he'd have to part from Spock. A surge of anger and frustration rose up like bile. He moved faster, the skipping rope whistling as it arched over him and flew under his feet, slicing through the air around him. Tap, 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 tap. He remembered the disaster aboard the Farragut in 2257. He kept moving his feet, kept flicking his wrists, beating time with the rope. Tap, 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 tap. Captain Garavik dead. 200 lost souls. Each of their names came rushing back to him. Flashes of familiar faces flooded his mind. All ghosts now. That hadn't been his fault. He understood that now, but not at the time. He continued moving, jumping double time, his pulse beating in his temples. Tap, 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 tap. He was on the shuttle. GS-54 organisms, deadly and beautiful, descended on the shuttle like blue moss. They were hungry for electricity. Tap, 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 tap. The emergency takeoff from the defunct space station. The Farragut cleared them for an emergency return. The sudden impact, the screaming of metal. A second blast wave clattering into the shuttle, far more intense than the first. His co-pilot drifting past the window like so much debris, his tether trailing him like a broken umbilical cord and the shattered visor. Jim remembered closing his EV suit's helmet, a part of him wondering if leaving it open was better. Why prolong the inevitable? Had he thought that? Or was it just a dark thought now? The jump rope ticked and tapped on the floor. Jim pushed himself to go faster. Tap, 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 tap. The asteroids pummeled the shuttle, and the Farragut wasn't responding to his distress call. Tap, 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 tap. Jim grunted and panted, pushing himself to go faster and faster. His legs and arms were burning, his stomach cramped. He couldn't stop the punishing memories. He didn't want to. He needed to remember everything and everyone he'd lost. Lieutenant? Spock's voice came from nowhere and everywhere, breaking Jim's concentration. The skipping rope caught under the toe of Jim's shoe, but he didn't stumble, he just stopped. Jim's heart threatened to break through his ribs. It was beating frantically. A stitch dug into his side. He dropped the skipping rope and rested his hands on his hips, taking gulps of air. He stared at Spock. Jim's mind felt as if it might break under the deluge of memories. Memories of pain, of a disaster unfolding beyond his control. Jim wanted to tell Spock everything.
He needed to tell someone. He shook his head no, as if he'd spoken aloud and decided he'd wait. He'd talk to Pike. He'd wait till he had a counselor. He would not burden Spock or Pike. Jim's newly made clothing clung with sweat to him. His whole body felt like an inferno, and his muscles felt weak and rubbery. A tension appeared in Spock's eyes that Jim didn't recognize. Spock stared at Jim, and the tears that poured down his face. Jim breathlessly wavered on his feet, staring back mutely at Spock. Spock stepped forward, and Jim threw his arms around Spock's neck, pressing his face into Spock's shoulder. Spock closed his arms around Jim's shaking frame. Neither of them spoke. Spock stood still, holding Jim up on his feet. Jim's heart had been beating so fast it had reverberated through Spock's chest. Spock could feel the tremendous cacophony of emotions radiating from Jim. Spock closed his eyes, recalling what his mother would do during his rare emotional outbursts as a child, and rested one hand on Jim's back and made a slow circle between his shoulder blades. With the other hand, Spock kept Jim's close by resting it at the base of his spine. Spock's throat clenched involuntarily. Jim's pain was not his, and he would not permit himself to feel it. He pushed it away and gave comfort as best he could. They stood embraced in silence until Jim's tears stopped falling and his panting and gasping slowed to long, exhausted breaths. Spock didn't know how long he'd stood there with Jim in his arms, but in that time, Jim's body had gone from fiery to the touch to clammy. Jim's exhaustion seeped into Spock. It was weariness beyond calculation, but also there was tenacity that was unlike any other's. Jim straightened up slowly and sighed. He touched Spock's shoulders and nodded. "Thank you," Jim said boyishly, looking away, and then he smiled meekly and asked, "Can we go home now?" Jim said it in an attempt at levity, but when Spock simply nodded yes, fresh tears pooled in his eyes. Spock lay in bed. He could hear Jim's steady breathing. He realized he would miss that sound. He would miss their meals together, the chess matches too. Although Jim had only been his roommate for a few nights, Spock had adapted well to his company and found it to be pleasant, perhaps even an improvement on living alone. They had not discussed Jim's recovered memories. Spock was curious, but also didn't want to pry or push. He also had other things on his mind, specifically his need to return to Vulcan. He had given little thought to his biological needs, something he would have made a detailed schedule for, but there had been no need. He'd been engaged to T'Pring, but things had ended with T'Pring and began with Christine, and then just as suddenly ended with Christine. He was getting dangerously close to Ponfar. Meditation was at very best a way to delay it, but he'd been so distracted. There was no other word for it, so deeply distracted by Jim Kirk's rescue and recovery that he had not been meditating as intensely as he should. The consequences of his inaction were indeed going to be great. Spock rose from his bed and moved silently to his desk. He picked up his pad and began to look up stations and ships that he could rendezvous with to make a journey to Vulcan as quickly as possible. He knew Pike would be willing to grant him leave, especially after Spock explained that his spiritual and physical health were at stake. It was not a conversation he relished having. Non-Vulcans often struggled with the very concept of Ponfar. It was simply too alien for most. Jim rolled over in his bed and was surprised to see Spock seated at the desk working away on his pad. "Can't sleep?" Jim asked. "I did not mean to awaken you," Spock replied. "Please, go back to sleep." "What are you working on?" Jim asked, watching Spock. "Logistics," Spock replied, not lifting his eyes from the pad. "Logistics? In the middle of the night? For what?" Jim sat up in bed, pushing his blankets back. Jim walked to the synthesizer for some water and eyed Spock curiously. Spock could feel Jim's gaze on him and hesitantly said, "I need to make a trip to Vulcan." Jim took a long drink of cold water. He wasn't sure if Spock was deliberately keeping the details to himself or if he didn't think Jim wanted to know more.
That sounds nice, a trip to the home planet.
Jim watched Spock typing. I am certain some aspects of the visit will be pleasant.
Spock looked at Jim. Good night.
Good night. Jim smirked. He was certain, had there been a door between them, Spock would have closed it in his face. He set his empty glass down and got back in bed. He decided he'd get more information out of Spock in the evening when he was distracted by Chess. Have sweet dreams, Jim added.
Chapter 3. Resolve. In the port galley, Jim selected a table with good lighting for a chess match and set down two steaming cups of tea. Spock had informed Jim that morning that he wouldn't be joining him for dinner. There were some things he needed to complete sooner than he'd originally planned. Jim had suggested a chess match in Port Galley, to which Spock had agreed. Jim looked at the tea and hoped it wouldn't cool too quickly. He wondered if he'd been too hasty in ordering the drinks before Spock arrived. Jim ran his thumb over his bottom lip, watching the swirls of steam rising out of their cups, and turned the queen in his fingers. It was his turn to be white again. He still wasn't sure if going first was an advantage with Spock or not. Ortegas and Christine were seated a couple of tables over. Their voices carried just enough for Jim to catch the conversation without feeling like he was eavesdropping.
It's too bad we can't deliver him ourselves. I've never been to Vulcan. I wouldn't mind if I could get a tour of one of their space stations, maybe get up close and personal with one of their starships.
Ortegas held her hands out as if she was seated at a flight desk, her fingers hovering over a control panel.
As if they'd let you. Chapel rolled her eyes. Maybe you could get in a T. Planahoth. I hear their museums are very hands-on, Jim said, walking up to their table.
You're looking well, Christine said, smiling at Jim.
Thanks, yeah, I've come a long way.
How do you know about Vulcan museums? Ortegas asked.
I can't keep up with the ones on Earth, let alone other planets.
Oh, I've been reading quite a bit. It's easy to do when you're off duty, Jim smiled.
You like to read up on the museums of Vulcan?
Christine tilted her head, eyeing Jim with a soft squint. Before Jim could respond, he saw Spock at the entrance of Port Galley. Spock's eyes fell on the table and the two teacups flanked the chessboard and then lifted his eyes to meet Jim's.
It's good to know your adversary, even if it's just chess, Jim said with a smile and nodded. Excuse me.
Christine looked at Ortegas, cocking an eyebrow.
That sounds like a normal reason to read about the museums of Vulcan.
Ortegas smirked, her dark eyes shining.
Well, regardless of that, do you really think they'd let me fly a T. Planahoth?
Have a seat, Jim said, pulling out a chair and plopping down in it. He smiled at Spock.
Spock nodded and sat down.
Thank you for the tea.
Jim set his white queen in her place.
Shall I?
Yes, I am ready.
Spock glanced at the board and then at Christine, who was leaving with Ortegas.
Long day?
Jim asked, watching Spock's eyes tracking Christine.
If you're asking if my work was challenging today, I would say yes, but I have accomplished many things that needed to be completed.
Completed before you take your leave on Vulcan, Jim said quietly.
Yes, Spock supplied as he looked at the board. You favor this opening.
It leaves me with a lot of options.
Spock lifted a brow but remained silent as he moved a pawn.
What are your travel plans?
Jim asked, placing an opposing pawn in his path.
I will travel via shuttle to rendezvous with the USS Bowman in 2 days' time, then to Vulcan.
Spock looked at the board and moved another pawn. Do you find my impending departure distressing?
Jim had been sipping from his teacup and the question surprised him. He swallowed hard.
Distressing? No, not exactly.
Jim looked at the board. his strategy totally forgotten, he reassessed the placement of each piece.
"You are just curious, then?" Spock asked.
"You could say that," Jim sipped from his cup again.
"I'd rather understand your motives for being so inquisitive in your own words."
"You're my friend. I like to know where my friends are going." Jim hesitated and added, "and when I'll be able to spend time with them again."
"I won't be more than 3 days, if all goes well."
"You don't want to stay longer? That's not much of a vacation."
"I'm not making the journey for a respite from my duties," Spock said.
Jim moved a pawn. Spock thought the placement was either an uncommon choice, a ruse, bait, or simply thoughtless. He gave Jim the benefit of the doubt and took his time while considering his next move.
"Is everything all right with your family?" Jim asked.
He hadn't considered that Spock might be going because of a family emergency.
Spock said, "My mother is in excellent health and reports the same of my father."
"So, why the trip?"
Jim watched Spock set a piece down. The move wasn't particularly offensive, but it did cramp his pieces a bit.
"So that's how it is," Jim murmured to the board.
"I have biological needs that must be attended to." Spock added quickly, "It is your turn," and sat back with his arms folded.
Jim kept his eyes on the board, but saw that Spock was leaning back, arms folded a little tightly across his chest. Was he feeling challenged? Defensive?
Jim moved a knight out, menacing a pawn. Not a real threat, but something to keep Spock focused on the pieces.
"I'm sorry that Starfleet didn't think ahead to have what you need here on the ship. I'm going to assume you already spoke with Mbenga and Pike regarding your biological needs."
Spock sat forward and swept up Jim's knight with a bishop. It wasn't a trade-free move, and it surprised Jim.
"Coming in hot, it'll cost you, but not just yet."
Jim moved another pawn and sat back looking at Spock. His cheeks looked oddly bruised.
"I'm returning home for Ponfar," Spock said, taking the pawn.
"I'm not familiar," Jim said. "Also, you're going to be in check soon."
"No, I didn't think you would be. It is a culturally significant subject to Vulcans, and of a personal nature. Being that we are friends, I will share some cultural anthropological articles with you if you're indeed interested."
Spock moved a level of the board, twisted the setting, and put Jim's queen in check.
"Well played, but I'm not dead yet," Jim replied.
"And yeah, I'd like to know, if you're open to sharing. It's always good to have a bedtime story."
Spock tipped his head and eyed Jim.
"That was a joke. I didn't mean to make light of what you're going through. I do want to read it. I want to understand. And to be honest, maybe I do find it a little distressing you're leaving.
You've been my anchor for the last couple of weeks. Thank you."
"You are welcome," Spock said, meeting Jim's gaze.
Jim and Spock both retired to their beds. Jim had won the chess match, but he wasn't feeling all that satisfied by the victory. He wondered if the win had felt unfair. Whatever Spock was going through had to be weighing heavily on his mind. Jim laid back and picked up his pad. Spock had indeed sent him an article on Ponfar. Jim opened the article and began reading. It started with childhood development, which Jim wasn't expecting. He sighed and read it with care, turning to lay on his side. He could hear Spock's even breathing. It was the most amazing thing to Jim that Spock just seemed to choose at will to fall asleep. He never tossed or turned, just laid back, took a few deep breaths, followed by an equal amount of short breaths, then more deep breaths, and was out.
"I need to learn that trick," Jim mused.
After Jim finished the article, he looked for more, but there wasn't much in the library of the Enterprise nor the Federation's. The one he did find through the Enterprise's library was written by a human xenoanthropologist, which he found irksome, but he had to admit their way of addressing the topic was far more digestible. The thought of his friend suffering from the onset of a neurochemical imbalance that could lead to physiological failure through blood poisoning called Plaque Tau, which exhibited symptoms like a psychotic break, that could lead to death was horrifying. He wondered if Vulcans had experimented with some form of hormonal therapy. Neither of the articles explored options outside of coupling. Jim was stuck on telepathic bonding. How is something as intangible as telepathic bonding going to alleviate a physical manifestation in someone's body? The gray area of the spirit, or katra, as the Vulcans called it, and body were not unlike the ideas of ancient faith healers calling on a holy spirit. But it wasn't some deity that was going to come and rescue a Vulcan in the throes of Ponfar. It was a bond bait. "It's fucking sex magic," Jim muttered to himself. He heard Spock rise from his bed. Jim glanced over as Spock made his bed with his usual eye for detail. Spock looked at Jim and nodded. "Good morning. You are up early." "I suppose I am. Good morning to you, too." Jim realized he'd read through the night. It wasn't unusual for him, but he felt a little sheepish about it. "How are you feeling?" "I am well. How are you?" Spock paused on his way to the fresher for his morning ablutions. "Great. Thanks," Jim said absently, his mind buzzing with questions. Spock's lips twitched a bit in an approximation of, "I see," and then he went about getting ready for his day. Jim sat up, stretching. He had an early appointment with Pike, so there was no point in trying to sleep. Not that he thought he could. There were no other Vulcans on the Enterprise, so there was little chance of Spock choosing a mate on the ship, although he had a vague recollection of Spock having a fiancé. Was she the one he was going to visit with on Vulcan? If so, why not mention her? The article said agreed that there were cases where the bondmate wasn't a Vulcan, and the Vulcan partner had survived and even thrived, although the writer from the anthropology department of the Vulcan Science Academy had mentioned this as if it were some desperate act of triage. Jim sat down at the table in the ready room and watched as Pike approached and sat at the head of the table. Pike looked tired. The fine lines around his eyes looked deeper than the last time Jim had seen him. "You're looking a bit fatigued," Pike observed. "I was just about to say the same about you, Captain." "It feels like I'm juggling about a dozen batleth," Pike said with a shrug. "Is there anything I can help with?" Jim asked. No, I'm supposed to be helping you right now. How are things going?" "Before my memories returned, I felt like I was in some kind of stasis. Now that they're back, I'm feeling more ready to move forward. It's not exactly a crystal clear path, but I think that will come with time." Jim ran his hands over the table. He was feeling better, but also anxious about Spock. "You'll be glad to know we're going to deliver you to Starbase One, where you'll be provided with a counselor, and after a period of time, you'll have some psychological evaluations before being put back into the command track and assigned to another starship." Jim nodded. "That's what I'd imagine would be the case," and then asked, "That's in the Sol system. I imagine it will be several days before you can get rid of me. In the meantime, maybe you can put me on light duty?" "How did I know you were going to ask me that?" Pike chuckled. "I'm sorry, Jim, but you're strictly off duty." Jim's fingers drummed the table. He was unsurprised, and yet it felt too soon for him to leave the Enterprise. Spock would be gone in a day, and by the time he returned, they would only have time to say goodbye. "You might be happy to hear we're setting you up in some private quarters for the remainder of your stay. Dr. Mbenga feels like you're ready on that front." "I agree. I imagine having a roommate has felt a bit like being demoted." Pike smiled at Jim warmly, but Jim looked like he'd not heard a word of what he just said. "Jim?" "I don't want to marry Carol," Jim blurted. "Excuse me?" Pike leaned forward. "No, I'm sorry, I just... all these memories have come rushing back, and I caught myself in a lie. I had convinced myself that I wanted to do something because I believed it was expected of me or that it was the right thing to do, but I think I was going forward with the idea because it would avoid difficult feelings, hurting Carol. I just realized I'm not in love with her. We're having a child together soon." "I'm sorry, I should be saving this for the counselor." Pike smiled softly. I had briefly considered a career as a therapist, rehabilitating horses. You're the next best thing. Jim snorted a laugh and drew a breath before he continued. I'd rather talk to you than a stranger, if I'm honest.
Then please continue, Pike said.
I've had memories coming back for days now, and I still haven't reached out to Carol. I love her, but not
enough to marry her, Pike supplied.
I'm in love with someone else,
Jim blurted, and his stomach dropped. He'd hardly put the feelings into words in his mind, and here they were tumbling out of his mouth.
You have just been through a very traumatic situation. Do you trust these thoughts, these feelings? This person that you're in love with, do they know? Are you going to let Carol know?
I don't think they know, but they're more perceptive than most.
Jim pictured Spock sitting by his bedside, patiently letting him hold his hand, holding him in the gym. He might not feel the same. He might not feel anything beyond friendship.
Jim shook his head.
Of course I'll let Carol know, even if this other person doesn't feel the same way. I can't let things continue the way they've been. I just don't want to do it in a message. I need to coordinate a call with her. I owe her that much.
Pike looked down at his hands. Jim, you might want to give yourself more time.
I wish I could, but I feel this in my marrow.
Pike sat forward and looked Jim in the eyes. Life is precious, and time really is more than a commodity. It's limited opportunities. The best we can do is find our truths and act on them while we're being aware, as much as we can, of the consequences of our actions, or worse, our inactions.
Jim tilted his head, looking at Pike.
You say that like I'm speaking from experience?
Yeah.
I am, and I'm not.
Pike sat back.
Our time isn't infinite. It's finite. And that's both beautiful and terrifying.
Jim let out a long exhale. He needed to talk to Carol and Spock soon.
So, if I was a horse, you wouldn't take me out back and shoot me?
Are you kidding? I'd enter you in the Kentucky Derby and bet the farm.
Jim chuckled. You sound like a man from Iowa.
I'll take that as a compliment, being that it's your home state.
As it was intended, Jim nodded.
This person you're in love with, Pike said.
However they feel about you, if they're worthy of your affection, they'll be glad you told them.
Jim smiled. You know you don't know me that well.
No, that's true, but I know you from your time aboard the Enterprise, your history with the Federation, and I have just witnessed your fortitude during your recovery.
Pike smiled softly.
Thank you, Captain Pike.
Spock walked into his quarters and found Jim pacing in the room.
Are you well? Spock asked.
I was just waiting for you.
I must cancel our usual meal and chess match, Spock said.
Jim pursed his lips momentarily.
Why is that?
I need to meditate, Spock said.
Jim looked more closely at Spock. His pallor was off. There was a bit of sweat on his brow and upper lip.
Is there anything I could do?
No, thank you.
Spock looked around his quarters. He saw that Jim's bed had been removed and that all his furniture had been returned to its original positions.
You've been given private quarters, Spock surmised.
Yeah, I had hoped we could have a sort of farewell dinner, Jim said, and then lifted his palms. But I can tell you need to meditate, just like you said,
Jim finished lamely.
I'm afraid it will have to wait until I return in 5 days.
I'll be at Starbase 1 by then, Jim said quietly.
Spock turned his head a fraction. His eyes did not quite meet Jim's for a moment, and then he looked directly at him.
It's been a pleasure to have you, Lieutenant Kirk, but I must be brief. We will meet again. Live long and prosper.
Spock held up his hand, his long fingers splayed in the traditional Vulcan gesture used during greetings and departures. He gave a small smile, but his eyes looked tight and his posture stiffer than normal. Do you need to go to sickbay? Jim asked, stepping forward. But he stopped when Spock retreated a step.
No, thank you. I just need to meditate, Spock said, his eyes softening a bit.
Right. Well, live long and prosper. And thank you for saving my life and being my friend.
Jim rested his hand on Spock's shoulder, his fingers lightly brushing Spock's neck as he slowly withdrew his hand.
Jim had been in bed for over an hour. He attempted the breathing exercise that Spock did at night before falling asleep. It wasn't working for him. He turned on his left side and closed his eyes. The faint hum of the ship was a familiar and comforting sound. He had the air set to a pleasantly cool temperature. Every time he was near to sleep, his mind turned to Spock. The sound of his voice, the liveliness of his dark eyes, the feel of Spock's hand as he'd held on so tightly upon awakening, disoriented and frightened, in sickbay. Jim grabbed his pad and looked up Vulcan anatomy, curious about their differences and similarities. Of course, Spock was only half Vulcan, so it might not be completely accurate to his unique physiology. He liked how tall and broad Spock was. His face was boyishly heart-shaped and his lips plump. His ears were distractingly charming. Jim couldn't recall ever taking much interest in anyone's ears, Vulcan or otherwise. Spock's ears were special. Jim rolled his eyes at himself in the dark. Jim wondered if there was any Vulcan pornography in the Enterprise's library and barked a laugh. What were Vulcans like in the sack? They couldn't be that different from most humanoid mammals, could they? Jim turned on his side and then kicked off his blankets. He laid back again and then thumped his pillow. What if Spock was heterosexual? That seemed too binary to Jim, even for a Vulcan. It was practically illogical. He tried to picture Spock with Christine. They had to have had some kind of... Well, had they? He didn't know. He could see Spock in his mind's eye with Christine. He imagined them together. Spock would be scientific about stimulating her erogenous zones. Jim frowned and turned over in bed again. The thought didn't feel right. Christine and Spock. No, not quite right. He imagined himself straddling Spock, feeling Spock deep inside of himself, slick and pumping. Oh, Jim said, experiencing his first erection after the accident. Jim got out of bed and walked into the fresher where he'd put his hygiene kit. The usual things had been provided, soaps, lotions, dental hygiene tools, and tablets. He checked the side pockets and found what he was looking for. He got back in bed and sighed as he let his mind play out more fantasies. He pictured Spock running into his thighs, taking him in the turbolift. Jim poured lube into his hands, Spock kneeling before him. Jim stroked himself, his hands slick with lube, imagining Spock's hands on him, his fingers inside of him. Spock bending him across the table after a chess match. It wasn't long before Jim released and let out a satiated groan into his pillow. Jim awoke with a start. He threw off his blankets. The pad he'd been using fell on the floor with a soft thud. Spock was leaving. For all he knew, Spock may have already left. Jim grabbed the clothes he'd been wearing yesterday and left on a chair. He'd only spent one night in the place, and it was already a mess. He had to see if Spock was still aboard the Enterprise. His heart was racing almost painfully as he struggled to get his boots on and stumbled out the doors.
Welcome back, Chief Kyle said from his station at the control panel of the transporter.
We've been outside for less than 5 minutes, Spock replied. Then, in an attempt at human platitude, said, Thank you. It is good to see you.
That's exactly what I mean. You were outside. I'm glad you're back and in one piece. It's not something I like crew members doing, Chief Kyle said with a sigh.
Spock nodded at Chief Kyle and turned to look at Sam Kirk, who had beamed in with him.
I hope the information you collected was worth all the effort, Sam Kirk said after removing his EV helmet.
Spock and Sam Kirk had collected three large boxes that carried various organisms that could survive in space from the exterior of the Enterprise. While some of the organisms would go into a type of stasis, others seemed to stay active in the cold, airless conditions. Spock removed his helmet and drew in a slow breath. He was struggling more and more with his focus. He assumed it was a symptom of his swiftly encroaching Ponfar. His thoughts wandered continuously. While they had only been outside of the Enterprise for less than 5 minutes, Spock found the sudden proximity of the cold, dark expansion of space left him acutely aware of the odds of meeting individual people, Vulcan, human, or otherwise. It was, for lack of a better word or more precise term, miraculous. Not that he was fond of ascribing such a nebulous meaning to things that could be clarified by statistical possibilities if one would simply do the calculations. Being that he and, for example, Jim Kirk were of a certain age and intelligence, both working in the Starfleet Federation, statistically the odds were fairly good that they might cross paths. Their mutual recreational interest in chess was also a boon, or more logically viewed, made them more likely to become companionable acquaintances. "These crates are heavy," Sam griped, interrupting Spock's train of thought. Spock had been meaning to run an experiment like this for some time, but Jim's recent exposure to the parasitic GS-54 organisms had made it seem more urgent that he understand these types of life forms. Sam grunted loudly as he moved the crates onto a cart. Spock wondered how two siblings, who were raised together, could be so unlike one another. "Please take the samples to the lab. I will require you to carry out the planned experiments. I look forward to reviewing the results in a few days' time." "Have a good trip," Sam said, his tone curt, as he pushed the cart laden with boxes into the turbolift. Spock placed his helmet under his arm and decided he'd change out of his EV suit in his quarters. His meditation sessions had helped a great deal. He wasn't feeling as emotional as he had been the day before. He was certain of this because he was only a little annoyed by Sam. Spock stepped out of the turbolift, his mind humming with his upcoming plans. He'd not been on Vulcan for some time. Shikar, at this time of year, was breezy, especially aired, and the stars looked purple just before dawn. His mother had awoken him and Michael when they were very young to see the strange phenomenon caused by the pollen being blown high up into the atmosphere. The memory was strong. Amanda holding their hands and walking them outside, both curious and sleepy. She'd pointed to the stars and whispered, "Tell me what you see." Spock had thought his eyes were playing tricks on him for a moment, and then Michael had gasped, "Purple stars?" Her voice filled with wonder. Spock had almost laughed. He could still feel the memory of it getting caught in his throat. Sarah had not approved of Amanda's decision to rouse them so early in the morning. Children's sleep cycles were delicate, according to his father. Spock grunted at the memory. He knew he would not be seeing his father, as he was most likely away on diplomatic missions. Spock's mother hadn't mentioned his father's whereabouts, which meant that he was not at home. He knew he wouldn't have time to stargaze either, but a part of him wished he could show Jim. It was something Spock imagined he would appreciate. Jim was almost to the turbolift. He wanted to get to the transporter room so he could read the manifest for the day. Either he'd miss Spock or he'd find out when Spock was scheduled to leave. As he turned the corner, he saw Spock approaching, his face relaxed, his eyes distant and lost in thought. Spock was wearing an EV suit. The belt was slung at an angle on his hips that reminded Jim of illustrations of old gunslingers. His stride was heavier than normal because of his boots. Jim stopped where he was and watched as Spock approached. The T-shaped breastplate functioned like armor to protect the vital organs, although on a Vulcan, it should go down further to protect their hearts. It suited Spock. It exaggerated his already broad shoulders. Spock's hair was mussed, short strands stuck to his forehead where he'd been sweating. EV suits were temperature controlled, but but there was little to be done about the heat people exuded just by being sealed in an airtight bodysuit.
"Spock," Jim managed to utter.
"Lieutenant Kirk."
"I need to talk to you," Jim blurted.
"I'm on my way," Spock began to say. "Now, urgently."
"Very well," Spock said.
Jim opened an access tunnel door to a Jefferies tube and pushed Spock in.
"This area is for engineering officers," Spock said in protest.
"I know," Jim said, shutting the door behind them. The space was small and cramped for the two of them. They could stand less than a foot apart. "I'm improvising."
"I see," Spock said.
"You're leaving."
"Temporarily," Spock provided.
"I won't be here when you get back," Jim said quickly.
"That is likely true," Spock said.
This conversation was proving pointless,
and Spock wondered if Jim was perhaps suffering from PTSD.
"Lieutenant Kirk," Spock said, in as gentle a tone he could manage. Jim clasped both of Spock's gloved hands and squeezed them. As he stepped forward, Spock took a half step back and felt the rungs up to the Jefferies tube against his back. Spock's brows lifted as he realized what Jim was about. It was then that Jim's lips pressed to his. Spock had parted his lips to speak, and his timing was both terrible and exhilarating. Jim's lips parted, and his tongue, soft and hot, pressed between Spock's lips. Jim released Spock's hands and wrapped his arms around him, kissing him passionately. The body shell of the EV suit was hard against Jim's chest, but he didn't care. He clutched Spock tighter. Spock felt his helmet slip out from under his arm and heard it clatter at their feet. Spock tilted his head back to pull from the kiss, only to bump it on a rung of the ladder. How could he have forgotten it was there? Spock felt too warm in his EV suit. Jim was embracing him, and it was not unpleasant. Spock turned his head away. His heart was hammering, his blood rushing in his ears.
"Jim," Spock said.
Jim kissed Spock's jaw. He wanted to kiss his neck, but the collar of the EV suit was stiff and high, so instead he kissed and nibbled up Spock's ear. He'd never heard Spock address him as Jim before. It was perfect. His name was perfect on Spock's lips.
"I must prepare for my journey," Spock managed to utter.
He closed his eyes and tilted his jaw, luxuriating in the kisses Jim was bestowing on him. Spock ran his hands up Jim's back. The gloves were both a curse and a gift. Had he not been wearing them, he could feel so much more.
"What if you didn't go?
What if you had a bondmate here?" Jim whispered in Spock's ear. His fingers turned Spock's jaw so their eyes met. They stared at one another, Jim's hand sliding up the side of Spock's face, his index and middle fingers resting against Spock's temple, his thumb rolling gently over his lips. Spock was frozen for a moment. Jim's touch was both soothing and deeply sensual, and the thought of a lifetime with Jim, however fleeting, made Spock ache and tremble. Spock tucked his chin, resisting the urge to press his face to Jim's hand.
"You do not know what it is you are suggesting. It is far different from what humans think it is. It is more than matrimony."
Spock forced himself to look into Jim's eyes. There before Spock, Jim's emotions were running riot. He was hopeful and hungry, determined and desperate. It shook Spock to see and feel all these emotions radiating from Jim. It was more than the look on his face. Spock could feel Jim, feel his Katra reaching out to him like a hungry ghost. Spock pushed Jim back with a gentle strength that would not be denied. Spock tore his gaze from Jim, but he could still feel the riot of emotions radiating from him. They hit Spock like solar waves.
"We cannot," Spock said, and exited the access tunnel door.
Chapter 4. Revelations. Jim sat on his bed alone in his quarters. Everything he needed was there. a nice bed, blankets and pillows. He had a desk to work out, a pad, screens for calls or to work on tasks. He could make a calendar and find ways to fill his days. He could access the entirety of the Enterprise's vast library. There was a synthesizer with an extensive menu of meal options. At the back of his mind, he knew he should eat, but he didn't feel hungry. He didn't feel anything but an ache in his chest. It was a hollow sensation as if there was nothing inside of him, just space, emptiness. Jim was never one to indulge in despair. He knew that about himself. He would not permit it. His fists clutched at the edge of the mattress. He relaxed his hands and sat up straighter. He took a long breath in and exhaled slowly. He focused on the future. 90 days of recovery with a therapist at most. He'd done his research to see how others in his position, similar but never exactly the same, had been moved back onto the command track. In 3 months or less, he'd be assigned to a new ship. He'd leave the space station and continue with his career. Surely he and Spock would eventually cross paths again, and Jim would be thankful to him, grateful to Spock for the rest of his life, and always be glad to see him. Jim nodded to himself. He felt a hot tear fall down his cheek and wiped it away roughly. He stood up from the bed and changed into his gym clothes. He just needed to get out of his mind and into his body. He wasn't going to waste time feeling sorry for himself. He walked out into the hallway, making his way to the C deck. He imagined Spock was already aboard the USS Bowman, or at the very least, on a shuttle. Jim pressed his hand over his chest. It was still sore from the breastplate on Spock's EV suit. Lieutenant. Jim stopped dead in his tracks. It was Spock's voice, but the thought of turning around to face him and to look at him, knowing that they would only be colleagues going forward, made Jim's heart clench painfully. "You are in pain," Spock said, his voice much closer now, his hand resting on Jim's shoulder. Jim turned and took a step back, doing his best to keep his expression and tone neutral. He wasn't going to burden Spock with his emotions. He cleared his throat and folded his hands behind his back, the easier to keep them to himself. "No, shouldn't you be on the Bowman?" Jim spoke evenly and let a light smile play on his lips. Spock's eyes searched Jim's face. Jim was masking his emotions almost as well as any Vulcan, Spock observed. "I wish to speak with you, privately." "I was just on my way to the gym." "Urgently," Spock said, echoing Jim's choice of words from earlier. Jim's eyes flicked away and then back at Spock's. He walked back to his quarters. He wondered if Spock was angry with him, as much as a Vulcan would allow themselves to be. Jim hadn't exactly conducted himself by Starfleet standards when he'd pulled Spock into a Jefferies tube and made a pass at him. Of course he knew it was more than a pass. It was a proposal. On paper, it would look like sexual assault. He stepped into his quarters and wondered if this would be the thing that ended his career. Strangely enough, he wasn't much bothered by that thought. He was still too distracted by the fact that Spock had rejected him, and there was nothing he could do about it. Spock wasn't one to dither on choices. He didn't want Jim. It was all pretty straightforward. Jim felt dizzy with dread and heartbreak, and he stepped back into his room with Spock on his heels. Jim turned to face Spock when he heard the hiss of the doors closing. Spock was dressed in Vulcan attire, a handsome black three-quarter coat with a high collar that exposed the very front of his throat. The closure wrapped across his chest. It was fitted and reminded Jim of a fencing jacket. The dark leather made Spock look paler than normal. He was particularly stony-faced and as stoic as ever. The two of them faced each other. Jim waited to be reprimanded or made aware of impending charges against him for his rash human behavior. Jim sighed. He didn't usually struggle with silence, but this was too much for him.
I like your jacket. Is it from Vulcan?
Yes.
You're wearing it for your trip home, Jim said.
No.
Jim's brows furrowed as he put his hands on his hips, looked at Spock's face, and then away, not knowing what to make of the situation. There was so much he wanted to say, but he also didn't think he was being fair to Spock.
Spock's hand fisted the front of Jim's shirt and pulled him sharply into a kiss. The kiss was strong, and yet chaste. Jim ran his hands up Spock's chest, his fingers idling over the seams and folds of his beautiful jacket.
Jim closed his eyes and parted his lips, hoping to inspire Spock to kiss him deeper.
Spock did not disappoint. His tongue pressed over Jim's bottom lip and then gently slid into his mouth.
Jim folded his arms around Spock's neck and leaned into him. Spock easily supported his weight.
Spock's free hand stroked up Jim's neck, his fingers folding firmly into his hair at the nape of his neck.
Spock walked Jim backward.
This bond began the day you first placed your hand in mine. I was a fool to think I could seek anyone other than you.
Jim stared mutely at Spock and watched as the Vulcan lowered his head and kissed Jim up the side of his neck.
Spock's tongue was warm and velvety against Jim's skin. The biting kiss made Jim gasp in pleasure.
Spock's hand stroked down Jim's back and up again. A soft murmuring came from deep within Spock's throat, a sound both hungry and appraising.
Jim dotted kisses up the side of Spock's neck and pressed his fingers into Spock's dark hair.
I thought I'd lost you.
I thought you'd come here to tell me off.
Spock tilted his head, exposing more skin for Jim to kiss and taste.
I've come to claim you.
If you mean to tell me this is your version of Kunet Solik, my answer is yes.
Jim punctuated the statement by nipping and licking Spock's throat with relish.
You said that well.
Spock's deep voice was a low purr that made Jim shiver.
Spock's hands slid down Jim's back, landing on his cheeks, his fingers gripping and kneading.
Jim pressed his hips forward.
Jim cupped Spock's cheek, his thumb gently worrying Spock's bottom lip.
I like the way you touch me.
Jim whispered, his lips brushing at Spock's ear.
I like the way your hands feel on me.
Jim said, as he pressed his thumb into Spock's mouth.
Spock sucked gently, his eyes fixed on Jim's.
I love you. I'm in love with you.
You know that, don't you?
Jim rambled, unable to stop the words that poured from his lips.
I can't imagine a life without you.
Spock took a half step back, his hands firmly on Jim's hips, keeping him in place.
Spock got down on his knees.
Jim's heart had already been beating hard, but now it was galloping.
He felt a flush of anticipation rush up his chest and throat.
His cheeks were suddenly burning, and yet every drop of his blood was rushing south.
Jim had made love to many people in his life, multiple genders, a variety of aliens. But this was the first time he'd ever felt nervous about sex.
A surprising cocktail of giddiness and shyness swept over him.
Spock looked up at him with an intense hunger, hands pulling at the waist of his gym pants.
Jim smiled, his expression coy, his dark green eyes steadily gazing at Spock.
You make me nervous,
Jim said with a laugh.
Do I?
Spock asked, pulling down Jim's pants and underwear.
Apparently.
Jim ran his fingers through Spock's silken dark hair.
I can't promise you don't have reason to be.
Jim shivered. He looked down to see his exposed, erect cock inches from his would-be lover's lips.
Spock parted his lips, his eyes fixed on Jim's.
Spock's mouth, wet and hot, closed on the tip of Jim's cock, his tongue exploring, tasting, and tracing over the head with curiosity and a boldness
that made Jim's knees feel weak. Spock's fingertips dug into Jim's hips, holding him in place. Spock's body was aching. He wanted Jim in every way. Knelt before his new mate, he felt the embers of desire that had merely glowed for T'Pring and Christine become molten. A white-hot heat, unlike he'd ever felt before, scorched him from within. Jim gasped, feeling Spock's eager attention. "Slower, please," Jim whispered, gently clutching at Spock's hair. Spock complied. Jim sighed and shivered. He ran his fingers over Spock's ears, enjoying the shape of them, allowing them to distract him from the sensation of Spock sucking on him with slow, rhythmic attention. Jim was dizzy with pleasure. Spock slowed his motion, but his hunger and appetite for Jim was no less intense. Jim groaned as he felt Spock pull back. Spock's hands closed tightly around Jim's wrists as he rose to his feet, holding Jim's arms above his head, gently crossing his wrists as he moved him backward till he was against the wall. Jim pulled lightly to see if Spock would release his wrists, but Spock lifted them high against the wall over Jim's head, their noses brushing. Spock nipped at Jim's jaw and then his ear. Spock sucked at the front of Jim's throat. "Spock!" Jim's breath caught as Spock bit down firmly. Spock released his wrists. Jim lowered his arms and embraced Spock. The salt of Jim's skin filled Spock's mouth. The musky, human scent of James Tiberius Kirk was now the only scent Spock ever wanted to smell. He kissed the tender skin he'd just bitten and rested his hand over Jim's throat and gently squeezed, holding him. Jim was tempted to challenge him, but the drive to succumb was far more alluring. Jim swallowed, but otherwise held perfectly still. Spock kissed Jim slowly and gently, keeping Jim pinned like a butterfly with ease. "Remove your clothes," Spock commanded. Spock stepped back and removed his jacket. It slid off his shoulders heavily and landed in a pool of black leather at his feet. Jim reached up, touching his neck. It suddenly felt naked and exposed, now that Spock had removed his gentle grip. Jim stripped, keeping his eyes on Spock, mirroring his economic movements, letting their clothing pile on the ground. Spock's boots were set down carelessly, Jim's sneakers tossed next to the foot of his bed. Spock's gaze traveled over every inch of Jim's body. Jim felt his chest flush. The heat in his skin traveled up his neck and cheeks. Jim stood straighter and resisted the urge to look away from Spock. Spock's hand rested over Jim's chest, just over his heart. The pressure of his touch was firm and grounding. Spock could feel the part of himself that had been suppressed and tamed move to the forefront of his being. His Katra was moving within him like mercury, drawing him closer to James Tiberius Kirk. "Kadiwa," Spock said. He stared, taking in Jim, the moment. The beginning of their marriage, their partnering. He wanted it painted in his memories in the greatest of details, to burn every cell of Jim into his mind and Katra. Spock's stillness made Jim nervous. His dark eyes betrayed no emotions. Spock's hand on his chest was beginning to feel like an extension of himself. Spock's hand swept up over Jim's throat, the side of his cheek, his fingers lighting on his temple, cheek, and chin. "My mind to your mind. My thoughts to your thoughts." Jim could feel more than hear the deep resonating sound of Spock's voice. Jim drew in a sharp breath. He felt as though he'd just been thrown into a pool of warm water, as if he was suspended and floating. He could see himself taking Spock's hand. Music warped and flowed around him. Uhura's figure ghosted beside them. They were standing in Port Galley, meeting for the first time. He saw Spock seated at a chess match with Nurse Chapel. It was a memory, but it was somehow alive. Spock turned and looked at him, their eyes locking. an afterimage of Spock moved from his seat and stood, and then was before Jim. The two of them were on the shuttle. Jim was unconscious, his body critical, his soul wavering and fighting restlessly in his body. Lights rippled around Jim like rings in a pool of black water, and he knew it was his soul feeling Spock's presence. Jim's eyes flew open and they were back in his quarters. He resisted the urge to shake his head. He didn't want to break the bond they were building. He'd never imagined mind melds would be so visceral. Spock stood before him naked, his skin shining, flushed with a soft hue of verdant green, his chest heaving like a runner's, his breath steady yet bordering on panting. Jim lifted his hand and touched Spock's face, mirroring the Vulcan's touch. Spock shivered and saw himself reading next to Jim in his bio bed. He felt Jim's hand grasp onto his, holding his fingers tightly. He felt a surge of electricity shudder up his arm. The connection he'd so carefully shuddered away from himself now made him moan. His loins tensed and his cock stiffened as he moved forward, pressing Jim to the wall. Spock's lips pressed hungrily over Jim's, his hands slipping into his short hair, gripping tightly. Jim pliantly parted his lips. Spock's hips lifted and rolled his firm cock rutting against Jim. Jim arched his back against the wall, eager to be nearer to Spock, to be joined with him, body and soul. Spock pulled Jim from the wall and steered him into bed. Jim tumbled back with Spock on top of him. Jim reached under his pillow, running the back of his hand against the mattress. His fingertips brushed the small bottle of lube he'd used the night before, while imagining the way Spock would fuck him. Spock moaned into Jim's neck, his mind's eye flashing on the scenario Jim's imagination had created. Jim laid across a table, his legs spread in an inviting V, his fingers holding tight to the table's edge, chess pieces rolling off the table as Spock thrust into him, sounds of pleasure escaping Jim's parted lips. The image flared and faded. Spock could feel what Jim felt in those dreams of desire. Spock trembled and pulled his mind into focus, into the moment he was in, the here and now with Jim. Spock pressed his hand over Jim's and liberated the bottle of lube and knelt with his knees resting between Jim's thighs. He poured lube into his hand and on his fingers. Spock leaned and bit the side of Jim's neck. He kissed and bit down his tongue, trailing hot and wet to Jim's collarbone, where he placed another love bite. Jim moaned and squirmed. Spock wrapped his hand around Jim's pink cock and began to stroke. Jim closed his eyes and tilted his head back, luxuriating in the sensation. His breath came out in short sighs and soft gasps. Little by little, his hips matched their rise and fall to Spock's touch. Jim folded his legs around Spock's waist and pressed his heels against his buttocks, encouraging his attention, urging him on with a firm nudge of his heels. Spock took pleasure in Jim's appetite, his soft, encouraging sounds, and the gentle insistence of his heels. Spock sat back on his knees, his hand briefly stroking the back of Jim's calf and squeezing it firmly. Spock poured more lube into his hands and stroked himself. Jim's breath quickened as he watched Spock stroke himself steadily, and he unwrapped his legs from around Spock slowly and parted his knees wider. He lifted his hips suggestively in time with Spock's strokes. Spock grabbed Jim's hips. The grip was firm, and Spock slid on top of him. Jim reached between them and guided Spock. He didn't want to wait any longer. Spock murmured into Jim's neck, his voice thick with desire. "Tahila." The head of his cock nudging, but not yet penetrating. Jim swallowed hard. He sighed a strange, nervous little chuckling sound. Spock lifted his face and looked at Jim. His eyes searched Jim's face curiously. His full lips were pink and swollen. "I want you," Jim said, brushing his knuckles against Spock's jaw. I told you. You make me nervous. I know. I feel what you feel. Spock whispered in Jim's ear and slid his middle and index fingers into him. Jim gasped and lifted his hips. He kissed Spock quickly, his mouth filled with Spock's tongue, their teeth briefly clashing. Jim twisted and groaned as Spock's fingers pressed deeply, spreading and coiling, bending and delving. Jim pulled from the kiss and closed his eyes tightly. Hot, salt-heavy tears escaped from the corners of his eyes. Yes, Jim whispered, his body pulsing with little shockwaves of pleasure. Jim reached down and stroked himself, his cock slick with lube ached. Spock's fingers slid free and he guided the head of his cock in. Spock rocked his hips, finding a steady, strong rhythm, each thrust bringing a satisfying, pleasurable whimper from Jim's lips. Spock's hands slid under Jim's knees and held his legs close, caging himself in as he watched Jim's face. Spock devoured every expression, the knitting of his brow, his glistening green eyes, the panting breath that escaped his parted lips. Jim's unbridled emotions on display fed the fires of Spock's primal, Vulcan self. Jim grabbed Spock by the back of his neck and sat up with their lips meeting and parting for a long, deep kiss. Spock felt Jim's seed spill up his stomach. Jim held on, quivering and twitching. When their lips parted, Spock pushed him flat on his back, and in three sharp thrusts of his hips, he came deep inside Jim. Jim shuddered, his nerves on fire and aching. Spock rested his weight on his freshly anointed lover and sighed comfortably as he embraced Jim tightly in his arms. Spock kissed the top of Jim's shoulder and turned his head as he bit a daisy chain of scarlet love bites across Jim's collarbone. Jim stroked his fingers into Spock's glossy black hair. "You're..." Jim started but stopped when Spock kissed his lips gently. Jim felt their thoughts entwine, their feelings and ideas wove into one another like a tapestry, fleeting words that floated between them, transformed like wool being spun into the finest thread of images and emotions. There was love and tenderness. Jim felt his stomach drop with nerves, a flutter of anxiety rise in his chest that he knew belonged to Spock, when he'd feared that he'd made a mistake by refusing Jim in the Jeffries tube. There was also a feeling of synchronicity that washed over Jim. Though Spock's heart was much faster, Jim's heartbeat lined up for every third beat of Spock's, their breathing aligned with ease. "You're mine now," Jim whispered, finishing his thought from several minutes earlier. "I have been for some time now, Jim. I love you." Jim's heart raced. He felt very human. He felt like he had when he'd been a boy with a crush. But he knew what he felt and that he shouldn't be ashamed, so he repeated himself, speaking louder the second time. "I love you, Spock." "Yes, Jim, I heard you."
"Good."
Jim smirked and squeezed Spock tightly. Spock in turn squeezed him tightly until Jim let out a little grunt of discomfort. "I have hurt you." Spock loosened his grip, looking at Jim, his brows lifted. "Just a little. Maybe just enough." Jim winked at Spock and kissed his cheek. They lay in silence together for some time. Jim's eyes were getting heavy with sleep. He wasn't quite truly spent, but also too exhausted to initiate more lovemaking. He quietly hoped that they would fuck before breakfast. "Jim." Spock's voice sounded on the edge of sleep.
"Yes, Spock."
Jim turned his head and nuzzled Spock's jaw. "I will tell you something, and I wish you to know that I am not saying it because it is expected of me in the terms of human traditions." Jim smiled. "I understand. I love you." "Yes, I love you too." Jim smiled into Spock's neck. "You are pleased, Spock observed.
Yes, I'm very pleased. I mean, I know you love me, I feel it, but hearing you say it means a great deal to me.
Jim paused and chuckled.
You are pleased, he mimicked.
No, I'm fucking elated.
Spock made the faintest of sighs. You can't take it back, Jim teased.
No, I have no intentions. You are...
Spock paused thoughtfully.
Very dramatic.
Jim sat across from Sam. He couldn't help the smile that kept spreading across his face. He tried to fight it, but it crept back at the merest thought of Spock. He shifted back in his seat, relishing the gentle aches in his body that reminded him of his lover's attentions. The way Spock explored him, kissed and caressed him, left Jim damned near delirious. Jim found himself somehow sated one moment and ravenous for more, more often than he could ever have imagined possible.
So you're not going to Starbase One at the end of the week? Sam asked.
Sam sat back in his seat at Port Galley. Under the bright lights and softly illuminated table, he could see that Jim was looking good. His color was back and his posture was more relaxed than he'd seen it in ages. He looked almost like his old self, and yet he seemed to be having a hard time staying focused. Jim looked at Sam.
Oh, no, it's been rescheduled. I'll be going there in about 3 months.
Aren't you supposed to be getting counseling? It seems like the kind of thing you shouldn't put off.
I know you're tough and all.
Sam turned his fork. It was so rare he felt like his brother needed any guidance that he was at a loss as to where to begin.
I mean, your brain got attacked by organisms that devour electricity. That's basically what keeps you alive. You know, keeps everything ticking.
Is that your scientific assessment? Jim chuckles.
Well, it seems like you're not taking your recovery very seriously.
Sam frowned at his younger brother.
No, that's not true.
Jim sighed, sitting back. He closed his hand around his coffee mug in lieu of squirming.
I just have some things here on the Enterprise that I need to, do.
Like what? Sam asked.
Well, get married for one, Jim said into his coffee cup.
What?
Is Carol coming here?
Sam put down his fork full of salad and stared at Jim.
I didn't even know you proposed.
I didn't.
She's having your baby.
Yeah, yeah, I know. We've decided that we're not really compatible.
Oh.
Sam furrowed his brows and nodded slowly.
Wait, so who are you marrying?
Jim took a swallow of coffee. He didn't know how this was going over.
Spock and I are getting married. I wanted to ask you to be my best man.
Spock? Sam shook his head.
You're out of your mind.
Sam pointed at him with his leaf-laden fork.
Did he warp your mind? Some kind of Vulcan mind control?
What?
No.
I mean, he was there with you, unsupervised, and then when you woke up, it was like he was the only person you trusted.
Jesus, Sam. You work with a guy. You know he would never do something like that.
Oh, yeah? Why not?
Because, Jim couldn't help but chuckle, it's fucking illogical.
You don't even like men, Sam announced as if he'd just made a statement that was the equivalent of checkmate and slapped the tabletop.
Just because I never gave you a list of all the men I've been with doesn't mean there weren't any.
Jim smirked and shook his head at his brother.
Okay, that's fair. I never asked. I mean, it's not surprising. I just thought since Carol was the only one that you ever really talked about.
Carol's great, and I wanted you to get to know her. I still love her. We're just not in love.
Sam took a bite of his salad and chewed rapidly, staring at Jim. He set down his fork and scrubbed at his mustache with his thumb and forefinger.
This has to be a joke, right?
Sam sat up straighter and looked around Port Galley. The tables were spotted with crew members, but there was no sign of Spock.
He's Vulcan.
Half? And what does that have to do with anything?
Well, nothing.
You'll be sorry when he loses his temper.
Who doesn't lose their temper now and then?
Jim picked up his spoon and turned it in his fingers and dipped it into his soup.
Vulcans aren't without feelings. That's a misconception. I think we're a good match. I love him.
Jim spooned up some soup, savoring both the flavor of his soup and the array of emotions that were running riot over Sam's face.
He was enraged over table crumbs. He physically threatened me.
You are kind of messy, Sam. I think Mom threatened you once, too.
That's not funny. You think you're so funny.
Sam stabbed his salad and chewed violently.
Look, I'm getting married. I want you to be my best man. How about you say something nice, like, I'd be honored, or congratulations.
It was the biggest not a secret secret that he and Nurse Chapel, Sam gestured with his fingers.
Yes, yes, I know,
Jim interrupted, placing his hand over Sam's.
Right before that, he was engaged.
I was practically engaged, too, Jim shrugged.
You know he hates me, right?
Sam folded his arms.
He does not hate you, Jim sighed.
I forget how sensitive you are sometimes. I'm sure he seems cold to you, or worse, indifferent, but he's not wired like that. He's just not the type to share his feelings. It's purely a cultural thing.
As you're the xenoanthropologist in the family, I shouldn't have to explain that to you.
Sam let out an exasperated snort.
Vulcans are batshit, and you're batshit for wanting to get married to one. I swear you never recovered from whatever head trauma you got. Dr. Mbenga must have missed something.
Jim looked at his brother and smiled softly.
So does that mean?
Of course I'll be your best man, Sam said, stabbing at his salad and averting his eyes from his brother.
Thanks, Jim grinned.
It's my honor, Sam added, looking up at Jim.
Spock will be thrilled.
Sam grunted.
Jim chuckled.
Sam shook his head.
For a brilliant strategist, you make some really weird choices.
It's worked out this far, Jim said with a mischievous glimmer in his eye.
I have never witnessed Captain Pike cry, Spock said as he lay in bed with Jim in his arms.
Those were happy tears, Jim replied as he took Spock's hand and interlaced their fingers.
Yes, Spock said, relaxing as he felt Jim's thumb rub gently at the back of his hand.
It was a satisfactory ceremony, although it lacks the gravitas of Vulcan ceremonies.
I'm just glad I have time to prepare before our marriage on Vulcan, Jim sighed wistfully.
It would be several months before their second wedding, and he was looking forward to it. He'd never been to Vulcan. He hoped they could spend some time traveling.
I'm glad your mother was able to come, Jim said.
As am I.
Spock had worried that Amanda would be disappointed in his choice of spouse, but she was far from it.
She took one look at Jim and then embraced him. Her smile and dancing eyes expressed nothing but delight, and Spock had felt his heart settle comfortably, knowing she was joyful on his behalf.
She is very fond of you.
I'm very fond of her, too.
Jim rubbed his face with his free hand and released a sighing laugh.
My face hurts from smiling.
Spock tilted his head, adjusting Jim in his arms, and kissed his cheek.
Do that again, Jim said.
As you wish.
Spock kissed his cheek more fervently than the first time.
Once more, Mr. Spock.
Yes, Kadiwa.
Spock said, kissing his cheek again.
Kadiwa, Jim repeated.
Beloved?
You're learning quickly. I shall have to increase your exposure to Vulcan linguistics.
You're going to be a tough teacher, I can tell.
No, I will be tender, because my feelings for you are tender, Spock said, planting a kiss on Jim's temple.
Jim smiled, turning in Spock's arms and hugging him tightly.
Spock embraced him back tightly.
Oof, Jim exhaled and laughed.
Is my embrace too tight?
Never. It's perfect.
That is.
Spock was about to dispute the statement, but Jim interrupted him with a kiss.
You make sweeping, Spock continued when their lips parted, and Jim struck again with another kiss, cutting him off.
The first kiss was followed by several more, and tender nips and nuzzles.
Jim tipped his head away, looking at Spock, who looked distracted in thought.
What are you thinking about?
Arguments.
What? Why? Jim turned on his side. So I may debate with you and entice you to kiss me more.
You're ridiculous.
No, I am calculating. Spock was gratified to be interrupted by another volley of sweet kisses, stopping his lips. The end.